Please settle in and give Caitlin your attention. Caitlin is our sole presenter for this next agenda item. We understand her aspiration is to present in 45 minutes, and we'll support her in any way we can. A watch? Does anybody on that side of the table wear a watch? Bob?
Here we
Bob,
go.
What time is it?
Partnership starting already. I need one that's... I have two now. I have a non-consumptive and a consumptive watch.
We'll see which one keeps better time, won't we?
We'll see which one gives me more time.
All right, let's roll.
All right, well, thank you all for both for the presentation this morning and for your attention. I am going to be presenting an MPA network concept or proposal that covers the Central Coast study area. It does not, however, cover the Monterey Peninsula. That specific area is going to be addressed a little bit later by other RSG members. Ah, there we go. These are the folks that have signed on to support the MPA network proposal you're about to hear. I'm missing Tom Moylan. I think I have everyone else. And I just wanted to say these are the RSG members that have signed on to support this, but this proposal really was based on input from a huge number of people. So it included RSG members. It also included external organizations, such as the proposals that we've looked at from Natural Resources Defense Council, the Point Reyes Bird Observatory, some of the data that Oceana provided, as well as the scientific input from the original master plan science team as reflected in the draft initial concepts. It also tries to reflect many conversations that folks listed up here have had with many folks sitting around this table. It also tries to address public comments that we've heard and received throughout this process, and coincidentally does reflect some of the concepts that were in the memo provided by the Department of Parks and Recreation. So again, we tried to take into account many interests and concerns, and hopefully those are reflected in the proposal you're about to see. We have tried to address essentially three guiding principles: meeting the requirements of the law itself, reflecting the best available science, and that includes both what is in the master plan framework and the science advisory team, the input that they have given to this process so far, as well as what's reflected in the scientific literature about marine reserves, marine protected areas, and the species that we're looking at, and ecosystem considerations. We have also tried very hard to respect the interests of various stakeholders, both consumptive and non-consumptive. And again, hopefully you'll see that reflected, and we can talk about that more both in the next hour and the next couple of days. Our proposal includes 17 state marine reserves, 2 parks, and 9 state marine conservation areas. And we've just passed out a summary that includes basically a one-page rationale for the proposal and then our maps by subregion. Specifically, we also have tried to build on the existing MPAs. So we have proposed modifications and improvements to essentially 8 of the existing MPAs, and we have proposed elimination of 4 of the existing marine protected areas. I want to make one point. It's a little hard to see this map, but one thing I want to say from the get-go is there are a couple important things to realize that our proposal does not do. I had coffee a couple months ago with Dave Edlin in Los Gatos, and he said, "You know, Caitlin, we on the consumptive side have heard that NRDC and the Ocean Conservancy and some of the enviros, you got a map for marine protected areas, and it covers 70% of the Central Coast study area." So I just want to be clear, this map does not cover 70% of the Central Coast study area. That is not what we're proposing, so I hope that makes folks feel a little more comfortable. I also wanted to clarify one thing. The map that was posted on the wall listed Soquel Canyon as a state marine reserve. That is not what we're proposing for that site. It's proposed as a state marine conservation area. We will get there, but I just wanted to make that perfectly clear for now. So this is our map. It's, again, a little hard to see, but we do have protection that ranges from the north to the south. So we start with a marine protected area, state marine reserve, right at Pigeon Point, and we end with one right at Point Conception. And this is the array in the middle. One thing I want to note, again, a little bit difficult to see from this map, but hopefully you can see it from the maps in front of you that have been provided by staff. We have some very deliberate gaps in our proposal, and those are gaps that are around the harbors. So if you look closely at what is proposed around Santa Cruz Harbor and what is proposed around Morro Bay and Port San Luis, we have really tried to listen to the concerns that have been raised by the fishermen. We heard concerns throughout this process about the importance of maintaining access proximate to harbors. We heard concerns just this morning about the cost of fuel and how especially folks with small skiffs and such, it's hard for them to get too far because of weather, because of safety concerns, because of fuel costs and time. And so we have really tried to respect that concern by placing protection at areas that are more distant from harbors and keeping the areas right at the harbors open. In terms of the ecological interest, ecosystem protection that we're really trying to achieve, we were guided largely by the Marine Life Protection Act itself, again, and by the Master Plan Framework. And see, these are some of the basic ecological concepts contained in the legislation and in our science guidance in terms of network considerations. How do you put the pieces together to make sure you're doing an adequate job from the ecological perspective? So our sites are designed to accomplish all of these specific ecological or ecosystem goals. Other considerations, again, that we really took seriously into account, the proximity to harbors issue, socioeconomic concerns, natural heritage values, and some of these bang for your buck ecological considerations. Going for sites that have lots of good diverse habitat and species in close proximity to each other. How do you be efficient? How do you put marine protected areas and specifically marine reserves in the highest quality sites so that your coverage can be more limited? You don't have to have that patchwork quilt of an MPA for every species, as we heard this morning from Dr. Gaines. We also specifically looked at the evaluation of existing marine protected areas. And that was, in some ways, a really important starting point for us. And again, a really important measure to see, to test our proposal and see if we met the standard that's been set for us in terms of what the Act requires and what the science suggests we need to do to be effective. So the gap analysis, and this is applied specifically to state marine reserves, again, because the Marine Life Protection Act requires representative habitats to be protected in marine reserves. So you can see a comparison of what the MLPA staff has told us we have in the existing MPAs, or specifically marine reserves in the Central Coast Study Area, and then what's proposed to be included in our network. These are just a couple of the measures or metrics, but they're the ones that were identified in the gap analysis as being areas that where the existing protection is really woefully inadequate. And you can see we were quite actually happy to see the numbers run because it showed us that we had done a pretty good job of addressing some of these really significant existing gaps. I thought this was interesting. We have some overlap in terms of the philosophy of our presentations, in terms of identifying critical areas between the non-consumptive presentation and the fisherman's proposal that we heard this morning. I would say there are some pretty big differences. Our focus really was trying to highlight some of the top ecological areas in the Central Coast Study Area. So we were drawn to six areas that we're calling ecological anchor sites. The Año Nuevo area, the Monterey Canyon, again, area, Point Lobos, Point Sur, Piedras Blancas, and Point Conception. And I'd just like to say here, you know, what drew us to these areas, again, was sort of that bang for your buck concept, the idea that these are areas that have diverse habitats, that have diverse species, that have, in all cases, really high natural heritage values. I'm just going to show you a couple of the photos here. So these were sites that rose to the top from a lot of different measures. And again, the idea was protect upwelling areas, protect lees of points with larval retention function, hopefully, protect onshore, offshore connectivity, all in a few key critical spots. So we've identified these really as, I said, anchors that make sense as sort of a skeletal frame for the rest of the MPA network to be built upon. So the idea is to have significant protection at these key anchor sites and then fill in the gaps as needed. We also looked at some of the other considerations in the Act. So although the Marine Life Protection Act is very focused on ecosystem protection and species diversity and habitat protection, it also has additional goals, including research and monitoring goals, education and recreational goals. So we have proposed sites that really try to target some of these other interests as well, beyond simply the ecological goals. And again, what we're looking for is a layered approach where these sites achieve multiple goals at one site. So these are just a few that I've pulled out to demonstrate really focal points for the research and monitoring aspect of the MLPA. In many cases, these are sites where existing baseline data is already available, where monitoring has been going on for many years, so we have long time series of data available to us to help with before-after comparisons if we're adding new protection in these areas. In many cases, there are partners, a state parks or a university partner on the land that can provide resources, both financial and in-kind resources, in terms of helping with that ongoing monitoring task that we know is going to be so important in the years to come. So again, we see these as really important focal sites to help with that monitoring task that is supposed to guide the adaptive management requirement in the Act. We've also identified sites that we think have especially high educational values. In many cases, these are sites that are adjacent to local communities. Many of them are intertidal sites, providing easy access for school groups, community members, what have you. In some cases, these sites are also associated with educational institutions. So, for example, the Terrace Point Intertidal Reserve that's proposed is adjacent to the University of California at Santa Cruz's marine facility. So hopefully that will, again, facilitate use for educational purposes. The Estero Bluffs Intertidal Marine Reserve, also identified as really a key area of community interest, where folks in this community worked very hard to purchase land through land trust efforts. The idea is to really respect that community interest and focus and provide a fabulous educational opportunity right offshore of all of that effort that the community put in on land. So I'm going to spend the rest of my time going through the specifics of our proposal. And one thing that I wanted to note is you are going to see quite a bit of overlap in the areas that we're talking about and the presentation that we just heard. And some of that I think is obvious because the Central Coast Study Area, even though it's a big chunk of coast if you're driving it, it's relatively limited area of water. So it's not surprising that we're going to be talking about areas in common. Some of it's because the ecology pushes us to certain areas because they're just the highest value areas. But a lot of it, too, reflects that there has been a huge amount of discussion and interaction around this table, both at these meetings and outside of these meetings over the last few months. So I really want to thank all of you for engaging in those discussions candidly and openly, and I hope we're able to continue that over the next couple of days and come to even greater agreement. So broken the coast into six sections. These are the sub-regions that I'm going to be talking about. And again, I'm not going to address the Monterey Peninsula in much detail. So from Pigeon Point to the Santa Cruz area, we have these six MPAs proposed. And let me show you the map and talk you through them. And you should have a map in front of you if it's easier to see that. Again, we have proposed six different MPAs in this area. We have proposed a marine reserve that goes from Pigeon Point to Franklin Point and extends out to 3 miles. So this is our effort to pick up representative habitat in a marine reserve in this sub-region of the Central Coast Study Area. It's got a lot of excellent habitat qualities. It is not, however, located exactly where conservation interests would like it to be located. Our real focal point in looking at Año Nuevo as one of our key anchor sites, ecological anchor sites, would have been to have a marine reserve that extended probably from around Franklin Point down to about El Haro Point, or El Haro. And the idea there would be to protect, obviously, the upwelling cell that's been identified off of Davenport, to provide really full protection for the birds and marine mammals, extraordinary biological diversity around Point Año Nuevo. You know, again, this is really one of those key ecological anchor sites that if you ask any conservation interests or scientists working on the species that are found here, they will say this is one of the hot spots. And that's reflected in the fact that the initial draft concepts placed a marine reserve and marine conservation area here. NRDC's proposal did so. Point Reyes Bird Observatory, who does a lot of the research on the species of interest in this area, also identified this as a place for a large marine reserve and conservation area. And yet we recognize that this is also an area where there is a huge amount of fishing interest. There is both commercial interest from the squid fishery especially, and significant recreational fishing interest right around Point Año Nuevo. So this is one of those spots where we just came to, you know, directly head-to-head. There is a conflict between what conservation would dictate for this area and what fishing, the fishing activities that occur there. So what we have tried to do here is craft an alternative that as a package adequately covers the conservation concerns. It's a little bit complicated. It's a little bit messy. It's not what we would have preferred. And frankly, it doesn't do a great job, I think, from a conservation perspective. I'm hoping it does an adequate job. And I really look forward to the science advisory team's input on this, because we're hoping we did a good enough job. But again, the idea is a combination that gets us where we want to go. So what we propose is the State Marine Reserve from Pigeon Point to Franklin. The wedge shape right around the point, Point Año Nuevo, that is a no forage fish only marine conservation area. So everything except for forage species, that would be the wet fish species, allowed to be fished there. So this is the concession to the significant recreational interest that's right around the point. I hope I've drawn the lines right. I did talk with David Crabb about this idea. You know, we can tinker with lines. The idea here was to provide protection for that important forage base for the birds and marine mammals and fish species, and also to acknowledge the fishing activities in the area. We have also proposed that the existing special closure area, that's the near shore piece of this, be extended to be a quarter mile buffer that bumps out around Año Nuevo Island. So it provides that disturbance buffer, hopefully, that will protect the seabirds and marine mammals in that area. Again, in talking with the bird biologists who have done this studies in this area, they said quarter mile, it's really a bare minimum. We don't know if that's enough. We think it should be a mile. But a quarter mile is sort of the lowest you can go and expect to have any value from that buffer at all. And again, they've identified the buffer as being critically important to those species. I know there are concerns, fishing concerns with that may interfere with some of the fishing spots right off of the island. But again, that's the sort of package we're trying to put together to meet a variety of interests. And then finally, the State Marine Conservation Area. This is the triangle. This is essentially the same proposal that Howard Egan put forward a little earlier. We have taken out the marine reserve that Howard proposed. So again, we're looking at a slightly different combination. We've given back the reserve and moved the reserve protection a little further north, where we actually think it will have hopefully less cumulative impact on the fisheries at issue. But we have kept the conservation area that we spent many, many hours trying to work on together and come to common interests on. Moving south, we have proposed also in common with the fishing proposal an intertidal state marine reserve off of Natural Bridges. This extends from Wilder through Natural Bridges off the Santa Cruz coast. And then another marine protected area that's actually proposed as a state marine conservation area at Opal Cliffs. So this is really meant to provide protection to a surf grass habitat area. No invertebrate collection, but it should not affect other fishing interests. So again, this is an area where I think we really did try hard to respect the fishing community's interests and concerns. We've left a pretty big area around the Santa Cruz Harbor open, including a lot of hard bottom habitat that's there. And I frankly have gotten a lot of grief about this from some of the folks on the conservation side who think that this does not provide enough protection. But again, we're hopeful that as a combination, these MPAs around Año will give us what we need in terms of habitat and protection, species diversity protection, and again, those critical seabird and marine mammal disturbance issues, trying to address some of those. For the Monterey Bay area, there's an idea here that I want to discuss. It is not on our map because we thought it would be very confusing to put it on the map and sort of skew numbers and be ripe for misunderstanding. So I want to be very clear about this. What we are proposing is that the entire Monterey Bay eventually become a no-trawl area. So this is in recognition of the scientific evidence showing the impacts of bottom trawling on biodiversity and habitats. So the goal is that in the future, we will protect this critical area, the Monterey Bay, from the impacts associated with bottom trawling. Sorry, this should say bottom trawling, not no trawl, no bottom trawling. Let me be very clear about that. And then the other piece here is that the idea is to phase this MPA in after a negotiation with the existing trawlers. There are efforts underway right now that the Nature Conservancy and Environmental Defense have been working on to do a buyback of bottom trawlers in this area, similar to the successful negotiations that have happened in the Morro Bay area. So the idea would be to respect that process. We're hoping it will be successful, and if and when it is successful, then put this in place, not to come in overnight, tomorrow, next year, and cease the existing trawling activity that's still occurring in Monterey Bay, but again, to have this contingent upon and phased with those negotiations. Moving down Elkhorn Slough, we have proposed also, similar to the fisherman's proposal, a state marine reserve for the slough. We do have a slight difference here. We had discussions in our hotspots meeting about Elkhorn Slough and exactly where to draw the line for the reserve here, and there was discussion about whether the line should come all the way up to the Highway 1 bridge or whether it should be a quarter of a mile into the slough. And what's at issue there is one particular mudflat called the Vieira mudflat that was identified as being of interest to fishing activities. And in our hotspots discussion, I said that I thought I could live with pushing the State Marine Reserve back a quarter of a mile to leave that mudflat open. At our meeting, the discussion focused around that being an important clamming area, particularly for low-income fishermen. Since that meeting, I've talked to folks associated with the Elkhorn Slough, and what I've come to understand, and this, again, maybe needs more discussion, is that largely what's collected there is fish for bait. So worms are collected, native worms are collected to be used as bait. It has also been identified to me as being one of the most high-value habitat areas left in the Elkhorn Slough. The Elkhorn Slough is facing a lot of impact from other activities, not so much from fishing. But one of the things that's really of interest are these native invertebrates that are, again, subject to a lot of other influences, including invasive species. There's concerns that the existing harvest level is preventing those invertebrates from reaching mature and large sizes. So I think that's an area we should revisit, and I am advocating, and our proposal advocates, creating a full marine reserve in the Elkhorn Slough, so pulling it back up all the way to the bridge. Finally, moving down to the deep water sites, we have proposed a state marine conservation area, again, not a reserve, a conservation area at Soquel Canyon. This is a site that, again, was identified both in the draft initial concepts by the original science team in the Natural Resources Defense Council's proposal, has been identified in the Oceana Areas of Ecological Concern proposal. So this is a spot that has come up again and again and again as having really high and exceptional scientific and ecological value. And we have proposed it as a conservation area, allowing only salmon and albacore. My understanding is that the fishing activity is quite limited in this area right now because of the RCA. But I did have discussions a little earlier with a spot prawn fisherman who fishes this area, and I think we could we should continue those discussions because we may be able to work something out there. We have proposed a state marine reserve at Portuguese Ledge. Again, this is a site that's been identified over and over and over throughout MLPA discussions in the last several years as being exceptionally high-value habitat. We've actually proposed expanding this over the draft initial concepts to bring in more hard canyon wall habitat that was identified in the gap analysis as being missing in our existing array of MPAs. So we're trying to get a little more habitat diversity with the modification to this site. Sorry, here's the graphic showing those two sites. So as you can see, they do the shapes have changed as compared to some of the earlier proposals in the draft initial concepts, for example. For the Monterey Peninsula, again, this is going to be addressed in a little while. We do have included in our map proposals for the Point Lobos area. And I think this is one that may be a discussion item as well. But what we propose is essentially adopting the Malpaso Creek southern boundary for Point Lobos. And this is the northern boundary is designed to bring in Mono Lobo. There's been some discussion about the importance of actually extending the marine reserve to the north to try to bring in some of Carmel Canyon Head, or preferably all of that sort of inshore area of the Carmel Canyon. And I think that's something that we should explore, particularly in concert with some of these ideas about perhaps adding, allowing spot prawns at Soquel Canyon. That might be a good combination because, again, we want to pick up canyon in marine reserve to meet the requirements of the law, and this might be a good opportunity to do that with relatively limited impact on the fisheries, provided we acknowledge the 70-fathom line that the spot prawn guys need us to acknowledge to not have an impact on them. We have proposed adopting the regulations for a conservation area offshore here that are the same regs that the fisherman's alternative recommends. So that would allow salmon and spot prawn, I believe, only. For the Big Sur coast, we have proposed five different marine protected areas, building on existing protection in this area. Starting to the north, one of our key ecological anchor sites, Point Sur. Again, this is a spot that has been identified over and over and over again in various proposals that have been brought forth both by the scientific and the conservation community. It is an area of really incomparable habitat and species diversity, unique oceanographic conditions, the most persistent and largest kelp bed in the study area. I can go on and on and on. I'm sure nobody here wants to hear me do that. But this is really an extraordinary area and one that we think clearly qualifies for marine reserve protection. We have proposed quite a few MPAs in this section of coast, and I want to give a little context for that. What we've tried to do here is leave areas open for fishing, so you have the sort of patchwork quilt effect where we have relatively small in terms of coastline extent marine reserves and marine protected areas, again, in an effort to leave some areas that have been identified as being important to fishing open, provide those opportunities. Hopefully this also provides the scientific comparison opportunity to look at fished and unfished areas and some replicate habitat in protected areas. So what we're calling the Partington Marine Reserve around Julia Pfeiffer and Big Creek, again, two areas in similar habitats that could be used as replicates for scientific study. We have also proposed a marine reserve at Salmon Creek. Now, again, I want to identify, you know, that both is an exceptional place in terms of habitat quality and just the species assemblages that you see, but it's also a spacing concern, wanting to make sure that we have some marine protection provided between the existing Big Creek and our next site down at Piedras Blancas. So trying to fill that gap. And doing it in a way, again, that recognizes some of the really fishing hotspots in this area. We have intentionally left Lopez Point, Plaskett, Cape San Martin. We've left them open because it's our understanding that those are areas that are important to the particularly the recreational fishing CPFV boats. So it's our understanding that Salmon Creek is not as critical to them as some of these other sites that, again, we have deliberately left open. In the Cambria area, we have proposed 5 marine protected areas. We have proposed a marine reserve at Piedras Blancas, as you heard this morning from a couple members of the public. Again, this is one of those key ecological anchor sites, high natural heritage values. This is just a spectacular spot and a spot that the public relates to well in terms of understanding the ocean and the species in this area because of the birds, the marine mammals, again, the extraordinary, spectacular coastline here and the diversity of habitats protected in this area. So we've identified that as marine reserve. Again, left the area south of there intentionally open, trying to provide a mix of opportunities. We have proposed, working with the Cambria Fishing Club, we have proposed a marine park off of the town of Cambria. This is, again, around the Leffingwell Landing area. And we propose this out to the 2-mile line. And then offshore of here is proposed a conservation area that would be salmon only. So pretty protective, but trying to provide some opening for salmon that would actually extend, you know, all the way up the coast from Morro Bay. And then in conjunction with that is a proposal for a marine reserve off of the existing Ken Norris Terrestrial Reserve run by the University of California system. So again, this is an area with a lot of existing research and monitoring focus, high-value educational site, and hopefully will provide us really unique opportunity to compare recreationally fished, closed areas, and open areas. So this is the only place that we've provided that would really allow us to do that. It's an opportunity that we don't currently have in our existing MPA array, a way to really try to assess and compare the impacts of recreational fishing versus completely open areas and completely closed areas. So that's one of the specifics we're trying to get at there. Now, one thing I want to point out as we move down from this slide to the next one, look at the sort of bottom right-hand corner of this slide, and then let's carry that thought over as we get to our final piece here. It's a little bit hard to see, so maybe I'll just go back up. We have proposed 5 MPAs in what we're calling the Santa Maria Basin. That basically extends from Morro Bay down through the southern end of the study area. For Morro Bay, I think we're hoping to get some agreement on this site. We proposed a couple of marine reserves with what's actually, I believe, going to be a state marine conservation area in the middle, not a park, because I believe we are recognizing the existing mariculture operations and not getting rid of those leases. So if that means that it's a conservation area, that would be the title that it would be given. But the idea, again, is to provide protection for the key estuarine systems that were identified in the master plan framework, actually in the MLPA itself, as warranting high protection. And we can get into the details of that in the questions if folks have questions about the specifics. We have proposed a state marine reserve at Point Bouchon. This is adjacent to but does not include the Diablo closure. We do have significant concerns about recognizing the security closure as a marine reserve. And I would encapsulate that by saying the problem is it does not, in our view, qualify as representative habitat, which is what's required under the law. Because of that thermal influence, the measured, you know, scientific studies that have shown differences that have been documented in that zone of thermal influence, it simply doesn't qualify as representative to the rest of the Central Coast study area. This piece of coast, 11 miles of coast or so, between Point Bouchon and Point San Luis, really extraordinary habitat, beautiful area that ideally we would love to see all of it in a marine reserve. It's not that big. It's 11 miles. We have proposed a state marine reserve on the northern side of the power plant in recognition of the value that the southern area provides to folks who are accessing the water from Port San Luis and Avila. So recognizing that the area to the south of the power plant provides rocky habitat, kelp forest, fishing opportunities that otherwise folks leaving from Port San Luis would have to travel pretty far to get to, whereas folks leaving from Morro Bay have the opportunity to go either north or south and access similar habitats. So we have proposed our closure in the area that is north of the power plant, again, to try to get protection of this critical habitat, but do it in a way that respects stakeholders' needs. Moving south, we have proposed, taken actually the Point Reyes Bird Observatory's recommendation for a state marine park and state marine reserve combination at Purisima Point. PRBO has done a lot of work studying birds, marine mammals, including forage analysis, studies of how the threatened and endangered species of concern birds in that area use marine resources, particularly forage fish. And this is based on their scientific expertise, have proposed a couple of marine protected areas around Purisima Point designed, again, to encapsulate some of that hard bottom habitat that's fairly limited as you go south of Point Sal. So we can talk about the specifics of that, again, in the questions and answer. And then finally, at Point Conception, we have proposed a state marine reserve. This is actually a much smaller area of coastline than we had originally discussed. But attempts to capture some of the important habitat characteristics associated right with that critical transition zone around Point Conception. This has been identified by virtually every scientific analysis looking at bioregion questions in California as being the transition point. So you have really unique conditions right around Point Conception, again, that we believe should be captured in a marine protected area. The proposal has shrunk by about half from compared to what we were originally looking at here. And we're also proposing that this reserve only extend out to 1 mile from shore. So again, really trying to focus in on our most critical interests and still allow fishing activities to occur. The point that I wanted to make earlier about looking at this slide, in combination with this slide, is that we have, again, very deliberately sited our protection, kind of concentrated around the Cambria, Piedras area, in order specifically to leave the area from Cambria south to Purisima open. So with the exception of protections for the estuary there itself, we have left a pretty significant area open to allow fishing opportunities. Here we go. So that's it for me. And I just wanted to, I guess, echo the comments that we heard earlier today, thanking everyone for their input so far and looking forward to working together over the next couple of days, hopefully finding more areas of common ground.
Thank you very much, Caitlin. Very comprehensive presentation. What we'd like to do now is to perhaps put aside about 30 minutes for clarifying questions and comments on strengths and weaknesses with the idea of turning by 4:15 to the third presentation. So let's open with an opportunity for clarifying questions, and then in 10 or so minutes we'll turn to strengths and weaknesses. And we'll I'll just go around the table here. I see David Crabb, and then we'll continue with Michelle. Say it with your microphone on, please.
But then everybody else
can. That was a positive statement.
I said, I've got a cough, Caitlin. No. No, I said, great job. I thought you did a nice job on that. My question was, in Carmel Bay, I think I heard as I was walking in and out of the door that you were leaving the Monterey area alone, but I wasn't sure. In Carmel Bay, there is an existing conservation area, and what your intent in that area was, that was that already do you know what your plan is for that area?
I think that is an area that's still under so much active discussion. I don't want to propose something. I would say that the interest, the key interest that I am thinking about right now in that area actually comes from a conversation I had earlier today with Tim, the guy that fishes spot prawns in Soquel Canyon, and trying to figure out a way to address some of his concerns. And what I was thinking about and would like to discuss the next few hours with all of you is the idea of potentially allowing spot prawn fishing at Soquel Canyon in that conservation area, provided we can find canyon habitat to protect in marine reserves. So, you know, figuring out where those trade-offs are. And Carmel Canyonhead, again, seemed like a potential site to do that because there has not been directed commercial fishing effort on that inshore area of Carmel because of the existing conservation area. So the idea of trying to work with that mix to come up with adequate conservation protection and hopefully less impact on commercial fishing.
Right. And then I had two more questions, actually. One of them was it seemed like even with the number of reserves you ended up with in some areas, knowing that you cut it in half, but it still seemed like it even exceeded the science team's expectation as far as distance apart and that type of thing. Is that?
Yeah, there's trade-offs there. So what we have done is proposed more smaller areas as opposed to less larger ones. So, again, the interest here was to try to leave areas open to fishing, and that's what pushed us to relatively more reserves, right? If we had met the 6 to 12-mile coastline recommendation, we potentially could have had less reserves. Instead, our proposal doesn't do that, and it's actually one of the weaknesses that we're concerned about from a conservation perspective and looking forward to the SAT evaluation of. We do not have marine reserves that meet that 6 to 12-mile recommendation. Most of ours are more in the 5 to 6 range. At the largest, many of them are in the 3 mile of coastline range. So again, it's that balancing act, trying to balance ecosystem concerns and ecological needs and the requirements of the act with retaining areas open.
And then my last question was on the reserve at Conception. How deep that is, 1 mile offshore? Do you know?
I don't know.
Thanks, David. Paul Riley, did you have a clarifying question, or do you want to?
Yes, I just wanted to
jump in.
Go ahead, Caitlin. There was no mention of the four invertebrate conservation areas off of the southern part, and also the existing Vandenberg SMR. What were your intentions for those areas?
That's right. So those are the MPAs that we propose eliminating.
Thanks. I have Michelle, Steve, Rick, and we'll continue after that.
Good. That was one of my questions. Caitlin, first of all, I want to say that I really appreciate the fact that you started with the gap analysis. I thought that was something that we were starting to lose, which was what we were missing from being protected. Something that follows on your last comment that I found really helpful in Steve's presentation was this idea about, especially following on Dr. Gaines' presentation, this division in size versus spacing, and maybe because you created it, you might have a bit more access to pulling this information out, maybe making a grid of less than 1 square nautical mile, 1 to 2, kind of the way he laid it out, and also the average spacing between. I think that kind of information might be real helpful to think about the size and spacing and the implications.
Sure, I think we can do that easily. One thing I do want to note is in the decision support tool, the way the coastline miles are measured is very misleading. So when we ran the data reports, for example, the proposal at Point Lobos that is quite similar to what's been proposed by the fishermen, I think everyone will acknowledge, that's about 4 to 5 miles of coastline. The decision support tool says it's 11. So it is measuring every little tiny indentation in and out, which is... our understanding, that's not what was meant by the SAT guidelines. So the caution there is, you know, how do you measure the coastline and being, I guess, clear and consistent and maybe using lat longs and sort of rule of thumb measurements as opposed to trusting the tool.
Thank you. Steve.
I guess my question is also about the spacing, particularly along Big Sur, and maybe this is really directed to the SAT eventually for their advice, but the question is, you know, I think we'd all understand that you could have MPAs too far apart, but in the guidance that was given, could they also be too close together to accomplish larval transport and those other benefits that we keep hearing about? And so that would be a question that would, I think, the answer which would affect your proposal.
Yeah, let me just give a shot to the Big Sur specific question, because I think where that really comes up is the Julia Pfeiffer and Big Creek, because they happen to be right next to each other. And I would say, again, there it's a trade-off, right? You could have a marine reserve that meets the size guidelines that would be 6 to 12 miles, or you can have two, and they're each 4 miles, and they provide that opportunity to have replicates and to do some of the scientific analysis. So that's what we proposed. It might be better to go the other way and just have one big one, and I look forward to hearing from the scientists on that too.
And a related question is, and this might be answered by some fishermen here, would that close spacing with the gaps for fishing, even though it's a fairly lightly used area, as I understand it, would that set up a dynamic of perhaps displaced effort affecting the non-reserve areas?
All you left us was basically sand. You took all our best fishing spots. You must have went to Fishing Game and got all the block our fish tickets and said, wow, okay, they make most of their money there, they make most of their money there, they make most of their money there. So we're going to take all those and we're going to leave the sand. Now, this would put us out of business.
I don't think that's how Caitlin went about assembling
the
presentation. I wouldn't impugn her motives in that way.
Well, I've been dealing with her for the last 10 years. She's been trying to put us out of business for the last 10 years.
Tom, you're right on the line. Stop.
Okay, I'm just telling you what's going on here.
Thank you. Okay, Mike Ricketts.
I just have one question. What bird populations, you reference to birds a lot in all of your reserves. What bird populations were you protecting or enhancing?
So I can provide the list. It's actually incredibly lengthy. The areas where we're talking about bird protection, specifically Año, Purisima, some of those key sites, are areas where the Point Reyes Bird Observatory has done, again, a lot of research looking at seabirds, looking at their behaviors, looking at their roosting and mating areas, and looking at their forage habitats. So we have a list. It's, you know, dozens of species. Some of them are species of concern, including listed and endangered species. And again, the concern is twofold, both disturbance of the seabird colonies themselves and then protecting the forage base for those birds.
Thanks.
But I'd be happy to provide the list.
Okay. Rick.
Thanks. Caitlin, I see that at least in our area, you haven't designated any of the de facto reserves, the Vandenberg closure areas, well, I guess conservation area. Anyway, any of the de facto MPAs, the Vandenberg area, the Diablo area, the RCA, don't you think we are missing opportunity for research and monitoring resources and funds if we don't designate those areas?
You go ahead and answer. We actually have proposed a lot of the RCA area throughout our proposal. You know, that's included in our analysis, which hopefully will be available soon. But many of the MPAs that we proposed include portions of the rockfish conservation areas. You know, some are the recreational RCA, some are the trawl, some are the non-trawl. Depends on where exactly you're located. But much of that area is included in our proposal. As far as Diablo, I think I explained why we didn't include the security closure. At Vandenberg, after discussion with scientists and the folks that we've worked with, we identified Purisima and Conception as being the areas that had higher ecological value. So we did not have an approach that said, just because we have an existing MPA or there's de facto protection, that's an area that makes sense to put an MPA. We took a hard look at that, and in some cases we've done that, and in other cases we've said, you know what, the existing protection isn't working, it's not the right spot, and we think it should be revisited. And I believe that's exactly what the Marine Life Protection Act calls us to do.
Thanks. Ray.
Could I just ask? I missed. I apologize. Could you briefly give me the Diablo Canyon explanation again? And I apologize. I did miss it. I guess I just would.
Sure. So the concern about looking at the security closure at Diablo as the area to do protection around Bouchon, is that the zone where the thermal impacts are has been identified as being around a kilometer on either side of the thermal discharge. And there's existing studies that show the influence of that thermal discharge and that it has altered that ecosystem. We have lots of monitoring data that makes that very clear. So the idea is that's not an appropriate place to identify as representative habitat for the Central Coast study area, because the scientific data shows it is not representative of the rest of the study area. It is influenced by this warm water. The assemblages that you see there are not representative of the rest of this area of coast, so it simply doesn't meet that requirement of the MLPA. And yet, that area from Point Bouchon to Point St. Louis is a critical habitat to protect, and so we'd like to figure out a way to do that in that same zone, but not relying on the security closure.
And I'm not sure I agree with totally all that, but I accept your explanation. But if I may add, and of course you should, is that it's also the area that we have, I believe in our, at least, the most biological survey data. I mean, it's the best baseline information we have. They've been looking at the biology of that area for 25 years now.
And luckily, there are monitoring sites that are inside and outside of the zone of influence. So our proposal is designed to bring in one of the monitoring sites that is outside of the zone of influence, include that within our reserve, and take advantage of that monitoring effort. So that's exactly what we've tried to do in that spot.
Is that the area, the Bouchon? It could, and stop me if I got to wait my turn again, but another question was, could you tell me a little more about that Bouchon area? I didn't quite get it from the detail. So that would include up to the monitoring, the Diablo monitoring?
The proposal is to go from the northern boundary of the security closure around the point to Islay Creek. Now, I've heard concerns about that, and I think there's room for negotiation on that site, but that's our proposal. So it would include that north monitoring site that Tenera monitors for the power plant.
This whole area may be one that would be a very fruitful focus for some more intensive work, because obviously there's some arguments on both sides and logic and probably some room to move.
And I would have one more request before we finish this, is if we could put up the map for that area, that would be helpful, I think, for the public to see. Okay. Gosh, I can't. Okay. Is that this
if
map here that I'm
looking at? The lights off, you could see
and
it.
And again, I want to be perfectly clear here. We understand this is an area that the fishermen use, and this is this is one of those hot contested spots. We're not going into this blind. We recognize that this is an important area to everyone. Again, we were trying to look at the broader area and leave some pretty significant areas open around the harbors. This was one where we really thought conservation, ecosystem protection warranted putting a marine reserve in here, and the mix is leaving a lot of area open that otherwise maybe would also deserve protection.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay. Yeah, but clearly there may be some room here to put a finer point on this area. Ray.
Caitlin, I noticed that on your Ken Norris State Marine Reserve that you proposed, that extends into leased kelp bed 208. The Department of Fish and Game has already said they would be reticent to put a marine reserve into a leased kelp bed. Are you planning on pushing that, or are you amenable to moving that line to the north so it lines up with the line of the kelp bed, or changing it to a conservation area that allows kelp harvesting?
I guess we've already heard that pushing it is my nature, so that'd be. My response to how to deal with the leased kelp beds is what I believe we should do is plan an ecologically sound network of marine reserves as the law requires us to do and as conservation says we need to do. I think dealing with the administrative issues of things like leased kelp beds is something that we can all put our heads together and we can solve those problems. I don't think we should change what makes sense from an ecological perspective. I think we should deal with the administrative issues head on. So in a situation like a leased kelp bed, I would say let the lease run if that means that you phase in full marine reserve status, call it a conservation area until the lease has run out, and then redraw the lease to reflect the boundaries of the marine reserve. That would be how I would propose solving that problem. My understanding is that the kelp harvest activity that far north is pretty limited, There's a lot of kelp in between there and Point Estero. So, again, if it was a different situation, I might have a different answer. But in that site, I think we really can accommodate everyone's needs.
Well, the other way to look at that is there's only access to a limited amount of kelp that is under lease. If you look at the total lease beds, that all the ones by ISP alginates are going to disappear. So the only ones you're talking about are two abalone farms. And they only lease one bed. It encompasses those few miles, and so you want to take some of that away. You know, when there is literally, you know, dozens of miles of coastline that you don't impact anybody to get some kelp bed leases, that seems a little unfair, whether you think he deserves that kelp or not, because they do need to access to the entire leased kelp bed.
Well, I guess if we have that discussion about needing access to the entire kelp bed, then that's something that we could discuss and negotiate. I need to have that discussion before I simply say that because there's a lease, something is off limits for a reserve where, again, the network considerations may suggest that that's a good spot for it.
Well, and here again, this is an example that probably does deserve some focused discussion, and perhaps there are some other solutions here. Tom.
I heard some of the discussion about some of your reserves that you proposed were kind of small and worked on the spacing. But it seems like when we get up towards Pigeon and Anno, it's kind of the opposite. They couldn't be much larger. It's been a number of years since we've been able to fish over 120 feet. And when I look at these go way beyond 120 feet. I think that we brought up before that logbook data and socioeconomic data is totally missing in the Pigeon Point area. And what is reflective is what comes up from Santa Cruz. So I would hope that there'd be some concession to at least the fishing business for the reserve that's proposed around Anno and the one off Pigeon, and particularly hopefully eliminating the one at Pigeon and making the one at Anno at least, I believe it is now, just a conservation area.
So, again, the philosophy on that area was to try to provide a combination of protection that would meet the needs of all interests. And it sounds like perhaps we're not quite there yet. But the goal was to have areas that are conservation areas. That's the larger right off the point. That's only forage species. So that's open to everybody except David Crabb and his cohorts. The conservation area is the site that we worked with fishermen to try to identify an appropriate area that is, as Howard said, less used than the area from Aptos north. So that's the least used area. Now, I recognize that from Pillar Point, you have different interests and different stakeholders, and perhaps this is something that we need to discuss more. The idea of trying to provide the full protection from Pigeon to Franklin was based on an understanding that there is fishable ground, there's reef and other opportunities north of Franklin Point, north of Pigeon Point, that do provide alternative opportunities for folks coming out of Pillar. Again, you know, our goal was not to have no impact on the fishing community. Our goal was to try to meet conservation needs, achieve ecosystem protection, and be as respectful as we could of other interests and try to make sure that we were aware of alternative opportunities in cases where we might be limiting.
Good. Thanks. Let's see. We have several other folks who want to ask questions. Bob, Holly, Bill, Dave, and Neil. And we have about 15 more minutes, so I think we're on track. Bob.
Caitlin, I have two questions. One, in some of the discussions we had with Fish and Game input, I thought I heard that if we had more than 20% of the rocky habitat, that the Fish and Game then would have to re-examine their fishing regulations because, and in fact, they would consider that as that large percentage, over 20%, would be taking so much of the habitat off the table that they would have to reduce our fishing even further. So I wanted to ask if you took that into consideration, that your proposal then would be actually causing the Fish and Game to reduce our fish take even further. And then secondly, I see that the lines that you drew around Point Bouchon were a little different than the shapes that were drawn around some of the other reserves, and I was wondering what you took into consideration to making those boundaries.
Well, let me start with the last one, and that's actually I'm glad you gave me the opportunity, because what we have proposed at Point Bouchon is actually a reserve that just goes a mile offshore. So, again, that was originally proposed as being a full reserve out to 3 miles, and we pared it back, again, in recognition of that being a sort of focal point for a variety of interests. So that's the change that we proposed there. We proposed a more modest proposal than we had originally discussed. I'm not sure. Did you have something? I suspect that wasn't what you were asking me, though.
I wanted to understand
why it went to 1 mile when in most cases it didn't, right? So, again, the idea here was to provide a mix of MPAs that met the goals and requirements of the Act and the science spacing and sizing and other recommendations. So in most cases, we have provided protection that goes out to the 3 mile limit. That's something that the master plan framework calls for, and in most cases, that's something that we've tried to provide. We have tried to provide a mix. So in some cases, that's full state marine reserve out to 3 miles. In many cases, it's not. In many cases, we allow salmon fishing in that area, in some cases spot prawn. So we've tried to accommodate interest in some of that deep water where we thought that was appropriate. Bouchon, I would say this is a site that probably warrants going into deeper water, and we pulled it back not based on ecology but based on concerns, trying to really work with the socioeconomic concerns and address them. The other question, I guess, I would ask to John Ugaritz.
Yeah. Bob was essentially asking if there was a kind of trigger or threshold, if a certain amount of hard bottom were put into MPAs, would that trigger reevaluation of other DFG regulations?
Could I maybe add to the question before you answer it with the question of my own, which would be about how providing protection through the MLPA relates to the Nearshore Fisheries Management Plan, and if there is additional protection provided in MPAs, what implications that might have for regs under Nearshore, if any.
I think the questions are the same. I'm not exactly sure what your clarification was. So, regarding the sort of 20% of area, remember that when we talked about this in regards to how MPA management might impact fisheries management, the discussion was surrounding if you removed 20% of a particular species habitat, then you may need to start reconsidering total allowable catch for that species. And again, that's somewhat of a ballpark number. But it's not necessarily 20% of rocky habitat or 20% of a particular habitat. You've got to look at what area that species inhabits, and that is for a stock-wide basis, not just a state waters basis. So, again, it's somewhat difficult depending on the species you're talking about. So for some of the nearshore species, perhaps you might have some influence like that in a proposal like this. For some of the deeper water species where they occur outside state waters, it's unlikely that you would hit that 20% level. And we can talk about that more offline, but it's a little less straightforward than just if you take more than 20% of the rock, then you must adjust fisheries management.
Thanks. It probably does deserve some more offline discussion. I have Bill, Dave, Edlin, Neil, and Eric, and maybe Steve again, and about 7 minutes before we want to transition to the next presentation. Holly is next. Yes.
Caitlin, I wanted to ask you, I'm looking at the matrix of the habitat amounts and the total amount, and noticing that the reserves are about 15% of the study area, and then considering your MCAs, you come up to around 24. And I'm just curious if you had a percentage that you were aiming for the network as a whole, or is that a result of the individual site evaluations that you did?
We did not have a numeric target, and it was it was very interesting to me to get the data reports on Monday. You know, I had no idea what those numbers were exactly going to be. Again, the process we followed in developing this proposal was seeking input from a wide array of individuals, looking at past proposals, looking at the past science team's recommendations. So it was very much an organic process, looking at the maps, trying to build on the existing science and take stakeholder and community and scientific considerations into effect and putting all of this into the pot. Originally, the proposal wasn't 70%, but it was a lot bigger than this. We ran the numbers, and this is what we came up with. So it was not, we did not have a numeric target in mind. What I will say, I thought it was very interesting because, again, the scientific literature from around the world looking at marine reserves, often the numbers you hear are 20 to 30% is the ballpark of where you want to be if you want to see really effectiveness from an ecological perspective. For MPAs, we're at, I believe, 23. Most of them are pretty protective, but for marine reserves, at 15.
Good. Thank you. Bill.
On the Bichon Reserve there, did you give any consideration at all to the fact you're laying a reserve right over the top of the transcontinental cable landing site?
You know what? I will admit that did not come up in our discussion. And if there are folks that think that that would have impacts on a reserve, I'd certainly like to hear about it.
Thanks, Bill. Good question. Neil.
Yeah, Caitlin, I appreciate the numerous reserves and making them small. But in our type of fishery, wet fish fishery, we must stay outside of the boundary by a considerable amount because of our, when we set our net, we get back to the skiff and we circle the fish. And it closed the bottom of the net, it takes about 10 minutes. After that, we're no longer catching anything. But under the regulations of the California Department of Fish and Game, if we drift into the reserve, we are illegally fishing. So we have to give sometimes a mile on each side. If you have numerous reserves, you're actually keeping us 20, 30, 40 extra miles of unfishable area. Also, on your proposal for the reserve at Point Conception, 1 mile, why couldn't it be 10 fathom? There's the rocks and the kelp. When you get outside the 10 fathom line, there's really just sand. And that's a pretty important squid fishery right there at Point Conception. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, one thing, and then I'd like to have Steve Schimmick actually address your last comment. I would say, in general, the way we tried to address the concerns that we were aware of with the squid fishery was to cite away from the hottest areas, and obviously we didn't do that completely, but on the Santa Cruz coast, again, we tried to accommodate squid there and cite the MPAs in areas that, although they receive some impact from the squid fishery, are less important areas. And I would say at Conception, the squid fishery was frankly one of the reasons we shrunk the protection there to about half of what we had originally proposed. But in terms of the specific question, I'd like to ask Steve Schimmick to address that because he worked on that area.
Yeah, all I can really say is I actually did look at the landing data, and I know it's incomplete, and we tried to avoid as much of it as we could. So it was a consideration. We tried to hit the area that we could not avoid it totally. To answer David Crabb's question, 1 mile off is about 120 feet of water. And I mean, we followed 1 mile because we were told that we tried to do it in a series of straight lines. I'm open to discussions on how to do it better. I really am.
Good. Thank you. We are hoping to wrap this part of our program up in about 2 minutes. There are a few folks that still want to pose questions. Eric, Steve, and Dave. Eric.
Caitlin, I got a few parts here. You've done a heck of a lot of work. I can't say I agree with absolutely all of it. Some parts I do. But you've done a pretty comprehensive amount of work here, and there's obviously a lot has gone into it as well. Comment about Diablo. I think your warm water, I disagree with the fact that it's not representative habitat. that it's because it's altered because of the warm water. I'll agree that it's altered, but you can make the same argument for Morro Bay. The warm water outfall there, while it's not inside the bay, where there's several MPA proposals, from working and living there for the past 20 years, I know the water that goes out just at the north side of that rock with tide and wind conditions ends up going right back inside the bay. So, and I would imagine, I don't know exactly where the warm water outfall for Moss Landing is, but I would imagine it's somewhat the same, as a lot of that warm water ends up going back into Elkhorn Slough to a certain degree, and the larval sucker-uppers on all three of them are all active altogether. So, and my bottom line answer for Diablo is that if it's not, you know, a pristine habitat in relation to everything else around it, so what? And to me, it's very unique because it's a strange little ecosystem. While there may be a few three-eyed fish out there, there's also a lot of the normal stuff that's there as well. It's just it's a little different because of the warm water, but it's not like there's tuna and marlin jumping, you know, off the power plant there. It's not that altered. And then a quick comment about the trawler buyout. While I have absolutely no stake whatsoever in that, I'll take off my diver hat and put on my harbor patrolman's hat and say that if, as you move forward with that and you're involved in those buyouts, please insist on provisions to deal with the boat after it's been sold, because that's what we're seeing is the thing gets sold to some guy that wants to make a yacht out of it, and then we're ending up having to destroy it. It's got to go cradle to grave, make sure the boat's disposed of.
I hear you. So I guess just responding to the issue of thermal impacts associated with the power plants at the estuaries, I would say, you know, if we had five large coastal estuaries with, you know, all of the estuarine habitats and birds and marine mammals and everything provided, and three of them were not influenced by thermal impacts, we'd probably, you know, pick the other three. But we have two, so.
Okay. Let's continue.
I know we're running out of time here, so I've got two questions, but I'll actually hold one for later on Vandenberg. My understanding, Caitlin, is for as design criteria goes, that you have purposely designed a gap at the harbor area. And I think that's good. I'm assuming that's because of the different user groups, et cetera. And I just hope that when you complete your network that there's consistency. I know we haven't seen Monterey yet, and we want to see something consistent.
I would say that I think there are very different stakeholder groups and user and community interests associated with the different harbors. So it's going to be very difficult to have a boilerplate approach because it just doesn't make sense in terms of complying with the requirements of the law and the needs of all interested stakeholders. I will admit it was much easier to do that and achieve the goals and objectives we had in Santa Cruz and Morro Bay, Port St. Louis, than it will be in Monterey. That's a more challenging task.
Which we're about to hear about. Steve? Speaking of Monterey.
Yeah, Caitlin, thank you, first of all, for being in the hot seat individually here. And maybe you noticed that I chickened out and I had six or seven other people to help me.
See, women are just tougher than guys.
Must be. And I also appreciate your efforts to think through what the implications might be for the extractive community. But I want to give you my observation, just very frankly, and that is that, although I haven't studied it in detail, intuitively it just feels like it greatly exceeds the requirements of the Act. And to that extent, I think it's going to run into conflict, not addressing, but actual conflict with one of the objectives we have, which is our socioeconomic objective. So I'll just throw that out to you as my observation about your proposal.
So obviously, we don't agree. We think this does meet the requirements of the Act, but actually think it is, and I understand, you know, one of the limitations we've had is not having access to all of the socioeconomic data. So we've done the best we can on those issues in conversations with many of you and with the data that we do have available and some of the rules of thumb, like harbor proximity. So hopefully we can keep working on that and do a better job. But what we have put forward, you know, this is an issue maybe I should have addressed from the very beginning. It really is what we think is necessary to meet the requirements of the law. We have not done some kind of, you know, strategic, oh, we'll put forward twice as much as we think we really need, and then we'll bargain down. That is not what this proposal is. It is a proposal that reflects our best judgment on what the law requires, what ecosystem protection requires. So that's what we've put forward, and I think we're very interested in talking with all of you about different ways to accomplish those goals, if there are better and different ways. But we really think that this is what the law requires.
Thanks very much. Caitlin, thank you very much for the presentation. Thanks to all of you for your very good questions. I do think, in fact, there were numbers of areas that were pointed out that would be very fruitful for additional discussion. Some areas of agreement and convergence, obviously some of divergence as well. So clearly there's some work to be done here.
I think that's fine. I want to show the whole thing and lose people's attention. We'll focus in and move our way around the corner. All right, so I am going to be discussing an area of the Central Coast Study area that I would say it is a unique habitat that probably includes the study area's highest diversity of users. And that includes just an incredible variety of legitimate stakeholder interests that we are trying to balance and accommodate in what is really a relatively small area of coastline. What I'm going to be proposing with Don Canestro's help is what we believe is a unified and balanced approach that addresses scientific, conservation, and non-consumptive interests in this area. But we also believe that it addresses most, if not all, of the specific concerns of consumptive users, again, in this region. Essentially, what we're proposing is an approach that zones this complicated area of coastline. So we've identified what we think are the most critical conservation and non-consumptive use areas and are proposing increased protection for those specific areas while maintaining access for a wide variety of existing consumptive uses in this area. Really, I think we have tried to accommodate all of the existing consumptive uses in the area. It is a little complicated, I will admit that. This is a zoning approach. But it could have been a lot worse. We are proposing essentially seven different protected areas, and this is down from, I think, 15, 16, 17 that we've been talking about over the last couple of months and even yesterday. So moving from the Monterey area up around the coast, I want to first note, sorry, don't move yet. Go back. There you go. I want to first note that the proposal for an MPA off of the shale beds has been withdrawn. We've taken the shale beds out of this mix, and we did that deliberately to try to maintain an accessible area for recreational fishing, for the party boats, small skiffs coming out of Monterey Harbor. We heard concerns at the Monterey Hotspots meeting from spear fishermen who said that, you know, if you do the lines wrong here, you could affect halibut fishing, and even concerns from squid, I believe, if you drew the lines in an area that could affect them. So we have, in an attempt to accommodate those interests, taken that MPA off the table. What is proposed is a state marine reserve. This is the Ricketts area, call it what you will, but a state marine reserve from Breakwater to the Chart House restaurant line. This is to 60-foot depth, and it does include a prohibition on shore fishing from the breakwater itself. Again, to try to make sure that we accommodate shore fishing interests, we are looking to Wharf 2 and also to the area of the coast beyond Lover's Point as providing opportunities for shore fishing in the immediate area. So State Marine Reserve to 60 feet from breakwater to the Chart House restaurant. From the Chart House restaurant to, drum roll please, Hopkins, what we are proposing is a restrictive state marine conservation area that is kelp harvest only. So this is an area that has been identified over and over again by the kelp harvesters in this area as being really important to their operation. This is an area where there is a persistent kelp bed at times when kelp is less accessible around the corner. So we have gone to great lengths to try to maintain access to the kelp resource close to the kelp harvesting abalone operations. We have, moving north, we have proposed a state marine reserve, essentially from Hopkins to Lover's Point. This includes the existing Hopkins area, and goes to Lover's Point. Again, essentially a 60-foot line, although we have proposed a slight modification off of existing Hopkins Reserve, and that's to bring in this Hopkins Deep Reef area that has been identified by the scientific community, particularly the folks at Hopkins Marine Lab, as being an interesting feature, a deep water habitat that could provide additional diversity to that protected area, as well as an opportunity for a study site that includes some of that deep water habitat and unique feature. What we have done there, however, you'll notice it's a little bit awkward. It's a bump out. It's one of those situations where we have pulled the lines in as close as we could to try to protect the feature of interest and only protect the feature of interest. So what you'll notice here is we're talking about a 60-foot line along this whole area. The proposed conservation area that was offshore here, it's designed as the sort of ease of enforcement buffer, that has now been withdrawn as well in the interest of simplicity. So this is the only area that bumps out beyond that 60-foot line. Moving on from Lovers to Esplanade Street, we are proposing a state marine conservation area. This area would allow kelp harvesting. It would also allow recreational fishing, and that means skiff fishing, spear fishing, and shore-based fishing. It would not allow invertebrate collection, and it would not allow poke pole fishing. From Esplanade to Moss Beach, we are proposing a state marine reserve that goes to 60 feet, and this is an area that is designed to include important non-consumptive dive sites that are between Esplanade and Point Pinos. Also specifically to address the concerns we have heard over and over again from the city of Pacific Grove and that community's longstanding high interest in providing additional protection off of their shoreline. It is also our understanding that this area is, frankly, less important to the kelp harvest operation than the closer areas we have opened up and less accessible for recreational fishing. So this is an area we're providing additional protection to achieve conservation and non-consumptive use goals, address community concerns, but an area where we think the pain will be felt less by the consumptive community. So that's my piece, and now we'll go to Don Canestro, who will talk about Carmel Bay.
Thank you, Caitlin. Don?
Okay, so, there we're sneaking down. You can lose all the north. There you go. Thanks. Yeah, I think it'll be the whole thing. Yep, that's it pretty much. Okay, so in this proposal, we've drawn back from up at Cypress Point and come down to the White House on the charts here and then captured the pinnacles. The diverse array of dive sites are very important to the dive boat industry as well as the diversity of habitats, kelp bed, and pinnacles here. Captured the west half of Stillwater Cove, which actually where I did my master's thesis, but Moss Landing Marine Laboratory has done lots of studies and taken classes there for decades. It actually splits Stillwater Cove in half, so you still have the public access point available in the middle of the cove by the Pebble Beach and Tennis Club there. It'll really benefit the dive boat operators as it encompasses many of the more popular dive sites in the area. But it's reduced from the area that was initially proposed up in here. The old SMCA that's historically been there is along here, and that the existing regulations would stay there with no commercial take except kelp. And then about midway down that SMC line, we propose a marine reserve that starts halfway between Carmel and Stewart Point. It would basically bisect the Butterfly House area or Butterfly Cove. And then it would connect to the old Point Lobos Reserve and come all the way down to Mount Paso Creek. It includes a lot of canyon habitats up in here and Monastery Beach, very popular dive sites. Includes some sandy beach habitat. You've got a Carmel River coming into this area as well. Falls back enough here, so a popular spot where the canyon comes in here for getting spot prawns is still open. It gives the offshore area here, this is just the longitudinal line, and it's not a specific distance or depth, is still open for albacore, spot prawn, and salmon fishing out here. And this ends just north of the public access point at Malpaso Creek there. That's really about it.
Great. Don, thank you very much. Caitlin, thank you. At this point, what I would like to do is maybe entertain about 10 minutes of questions. And if there is a desire to ask a lot more questions, perhaps some of them can be taken up offline. I do want to give time to hear from the fishers and from the integrated group as well. So again, I think significantly this is, in fact, a unified package that the conservation and diving interests were able to put together this morning, and that's major progress from yesterday. It's place to start the conversation at least, and I believe that as Caitlin and Don indicated, there was a serious effort to take other interests into account. So let's ask for some clarifying questions. Michelle.
What was the recommendation on Long Marine Lab? Was that polled as well?
Yes. This would be folded into the conservation array presented with the missing piece.
David Crabb.
I mean, my first thought, I think it's great work that you guys are getting together and coming to an agreement on something. But, my first look at it, if you, and maybe clarify if I don't have this right, but the area west of the Ricketts Reserve is kelp only, and the area in Carmel Bay is kelp only.
The area in Carmel Bay is not kelp only.
Okay.
I think that, are you talking about the SMCA?
Correct. So that's
existing regulations. We are not proposing a modification to the regulations in the SMCA in Carmel Bay. Open to all recreational fishing and kelp harvesting.
Thanks for that clarification. So when I look at the map and think about the number of users in the area, It just doesn't come to me that we're dividing up the pie here. Or we are. It's a major slice for one group. That's just my sense off the top of my head. It doesn't seem like we're giving any opportunity to a lot of the other users.
David, your comment is kind of a global take looking at this part of the coast. Do you have any specific interests or boundaries that are of particular concern, or is it a more general comment?
Well, it's a general comment, but, you know, a lot of the concerns are ones that I'm sure have been heard many times. And, you know, the weather break between Hopkins and the Bell Buoy is one. The kelp issue, and also down around the Lobos area. When I tie that into the rest of the package that they've proposed, the near shore fishery guys are really, there's the reef down there by Malpaso, and then the reef south of Point Sur, really, really are going to be displacing to areas that first of all, are not as good fishing areas. And my changes would be to obviously move Lobos up, not much, but just a little bit, just to maybe split that reef. And as far as the areas around Pacific Grove and the other areas, to make them conservation areas that allow some other uses, but maybe protect the some of the fish that are of concern.
Can I just address one piece of that? One thing David said, I feel like I really do need to try to correct, which is that what we're trying to do is meet the needs of one group. And I need to be really clear here. This is not one group. I understand there's a huge diversity of interest in the fishing community. Well, so too are there a diversity of interests on the non-consumptive side. If you group us as consumptive, non-consumptive, well, saying, you address squid, that doesn't mean the rockfish guy likes it. Well, same on the non-consumptive side. We have conservation interests. We have scientific interests. We have recreational users that are non-consumptive divers. We also have community interests, like the folks in the city of Pacific Grove who have a different non-consumptive recreational use. So I'm not saying that our proposal accommodates everybody's needs and gives everybody what they want, but what we have tried to do is bring in a mix of needs on the non-consumptive side as well. And obviously, that's challenging just as your job is.
Right, and I guess my reply to that is that I'm hoping to bring in a mix of non-consumptive and a new term here, sustainable consumptive fishing in the area and not just meet the needs of the non-consumptive.
And nor are we.
Don, and then we'll continue around the table.
I also just wanted to point out that a lot of that is only out to 60 feet, and the rest of the 2¾ miles or whatever that are there are still open. So,
thanks, Don. Art.
Yeah, thanks. Is that on? Is that on? Yes, thank you.
Yes.
I just want to thank the people for the compromises they've made, and just to point out that the gentleman's put up there, and those kind of fluorescent green areas on the map are the persistent kelp beds, and I don't know if it'd be possible to zoom in on the Monterey Peninsula area just for a second. Just to say that, just to give people a little bit of a... right now, we're not allowed to harvest in this area. However, we have been for the past 5 years harvesting in this area, and all the way out to Point Pinos. We would be then allowed to be harvesting here and in this area. As you can see, this persistent part of the kelp bed would be disallowed to harvest in. And it's in the interest of not concentrating too much harvesting area in a small area, I would just wonder if, for example, whether there could be a line drawn here that would allow harvesting in that area. And this is a new idea so far in all the proposals we've heard. We haven't seen a marine reserve being pulled around this side of the point. And I'm curious. I understand that's the interest of Pacific Grove. And I guess I'm just expressing that's a new area. And then finally, if we're going to be so restricted on this side, it would be interesting for kelp harvesters to be able to consider harvesting around the Carmel Point area, where there is another persistent kelp bed, and this proposal would eliminate about half of that bed as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Art. Let's continue around Howard.
Yeah, I was wondering and looking at this. Array. I'm curious how enforcement would work going around this half circle here. It seems like there's a lot of jagged lines there.
We did have an enforcement person in the room with us during part of our discussion, and he said, you know, yes, you would want to do some rule of thumb, you know, basic straight lining, and that he thought that could be done, that what we were talking about here was not a bunch of jagged in and out around a canyon. It's an area where you could get pretty close with a straight line. So that was the feedback we got.
Thanks. Tom Hafer.
I just want to remind Don that the Nearshore guys fish inside 60 feet. I don't know if you forgot that or not.
Thank you. Continuing around, Steve.
I'd actually like to hear Dave Edlund's comments before I comment.
Dave Edlund. And Bob, I do see you back there.
Yeah, thanks for keeping this map up. I share Art's concern on the tip of Pinos. Basically, that line that's cutting that kelp bed there, I think it's that esplanade. Not only is that preventing art from harvesting that strong kelp bed that really starts there, also when recreational divers go out to spearfish, many times we go to Coral Street, which is the next one over, and if the conditions are right, we try to go out and dive on that outer Pinos area. It's a tough place to get to, but it is one of our favorite spots. So I would throw out the same idea that Art has of moving the border on the conservation area to split Pinos to allow reserve on the south side, but allow some of the traditional spearfishing to take place over there, and kelp harvest. And I had a comment on Carmel, if that could be brought up. I understand this concern on the Deepwater Canyon. In our fishermen's existing proposal, we have more of the Deepwater Canyon in the conservation area, and I see basically in that south part of the map here, basically shifting all the Carmel Canyon basically into reserve, and that seems reasonable. It certainly would enhance Lobos, but I do have concerns on the top, SMR on the top. If you take a look at Stillwater, which is kind of those two, one finger of it is protected by the reserve and one's in blue. The one in blue is very shallow. It's actually suffers, I believe, from pinniped pollution. The population of pinnipeds has increased there, and while it's unclear, people on the water quality suggest, we don't dive in that area because there is higher pollution. We dive in the area that is proposed as reserve, that little arm that comes up, which is kind of the greater Stillwater. So that is the premier area, and as I mentioned before, it's the number one area for recreational spearfishing in this area. And while dive boats do come on the outside, recreational sightseeing in most of Stillwater doesn't happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Steve.
Yeah, I guess I have to say kind of honestly that this new component to the plan makes it feel more extreme to me. A lot more limitations. I think that, I accept you, it's your word that you've deliberated about multi-use, but it really feels like it's more extreme in terms of exclusion and multi-use rather than a moderate plan that really accommodates a lot of multi-use. And, the CFC proposal, you've properly stated there are a number of different components within your vision of who's using that, but you're hearing from people who are other multi-users who are saying that they're feeling kind of excluded. I want to also, I guess, speak to probably the one area that I really have to represent wearing my city of Monterey hat, and that is the breakwater area. And, well, first, going back to the whole proposal of this area, I would ask generally what the science basis of this proposal is. How does it fit in with SAT guidelines and what have you? And that's just up in the throughout that you can think about and maybe answer a little bit later, but that is a real question that leaps out to me about whether there's a science background for this or whether it's strictly just dividing a certain vision of multiple use up. And then going to the what's called Etobicoke Park area from the breakwater to Hopkins. There's certainly a science question for there because you're talking about making a marine reserve out of a very small area that, as we heard yesterday, has between 500 to 1,000 divers per day on weekends impacting it. And whether or not it's a real science question, I think I know the answer to this, about whether or not that level of human use is compatible with marine reserve status under the law. And I suspect it's not. I suspect you get to the point where human use impacts resources in their own right, and you're not going to get the benefits of biodiversity or increased size that you would otherwise get when you have an area that's, to quote the Act, subject to minimal human use. There are other implications of that part of the proposal regarding the Etobicoke Park area. you know, I've spoken before about the safety issue, which is a real issue for me. It's a personal issue for me as well, because I look out my window of my office at one of our launch ramps. You know, I see those families in very small boats. Sometimes they're lake boats with bass, rigged for bass fishing, and sometimes they're little aluminum boats. I see them going out. And what we're talking about in the Ed Ricketts Park area is not that it's an area that's intensely used by recreational anglers, because it's not. But it's a question of who uses it and when they use it. And as you've heard already, it's a protected area that is utilized by those small boats, particularly when the conditions started getting a little rough. That's where they'll go. And I'm a person who had, out of my 40 years in my work career, between being a lifeguard and working at Santa Cruz Harbor and what have you, I've got 23 years working rescue boat operations. And when I look at those boats and I think about that situation out there, I can really visualize outcomes. So it's a very real thing for me. I also want to point out that the pier issue, the breakwater, long history behind that. City of Monterey helped build that road structure out there in January of 1942, if that rings any bells, and with a commitment from the Navy at the time that when the war was over, the city would be able to use it for public access that included fishing. And the city has over all that time really actively taken actions to make sure that fishing could continue in that area, which it does. It's not a heavily utilized area, but it's an important area for fishing. It's an area that the handicap can use and our citizens can use. It's an area that doesn't require a Department of Fish and Game license, so it's more likely that families and what have you would use that area. Again, the city has made a real commitment to having that open for fishing for about 60 years. And I think you're going to find, you know, at least from my city's point of view, they deliberated about these very questions of making the Ed Ricketts Park area and the breakwater a marine reserve or a divers-only area back in 1998 and 99, I think it was. They had 15 months' worth of hearings before the city's Parks and Recreation Commission and the city council on this very issue. And so it had a thorough public review about impacts on citizens and infrastructure and what have you. And they largely concluded that it was what the issue was really about was basically one group wanting to force other groups out of an area to have it to themselves. And it didn't sit well with the city, and they did not support what could have been marine reserve status. They wanted to allow recreational angling and kelp harvesting in a limited way and what have you in the area. And so that public process is in the background on this issue, and it's why I have to represent this issue. And so at least for that area, I think it's really an ill-founded part of the proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I'd like to just real quickly respond to the scientific question, if I could.
Go ahead.
As I said, I think this is an area with a lot of different interests and different goals and objectives are trying to be accomplished here. In terms of, you know, what the science might say about this area, I would specifically just note that this is an area, the area off of Monterey, and specifically, you know, breakwater around Hopkins, that's been identified as a fish nursery. So that's certainly one of the qualities that, from a scientific perspective, we're interested in providing more protection to. The intertidal diversity around the Pacific Grove tide pools, extraordinary and, you know, well-researched and recognized. The great tide pools, one of the areas with the richest invertebrate biodiversity in the area. The idea of extending a little more offshore extent there, I think, is completely consistent with the master plan framework guidelines. In Carmel Canyon, the idea of expanding the existing Lobos Reserve, again, brings us more into consistency with what the master plan framework talks about in terms of shoreline extent, and specifically the issue that Dave Edlin mentioned, the canyon, you know, trying to ensure more connectivity with protecting a nearshore canyon head, which is something that's canyons are specifically called out in the Marine Life Protection Act as one of the representative habitats we must protect and include in our array. So those are some of the areas where I think really there is a strong scientific basis for some of the proposals we have. In other areas, one of the goals and objectives, obviously, that we're trying to accommodate is Goal 3, Objective 1, And there are areas that, you know, again, these are the high-value recreational areas where we're trying to accommodate the needs of all recreational users. Sounds like, you know, we're not happy with it yet. We're not singing Kumbaya, but we are. That's what we're trying to do here.
Thank you, Kate. I'd like to just take a scan of our intended agenda for the day, and we recognize that this may need to be modified a bit, and we're certainly prepared for that to happen. What we intend to do is to begin by taking stock of important developments that may have happened since we adjourned yesterday. There may have been some changes that are noteworthy to the candidate packages, and if so, we'd like to hear about that. We also, in particular, are interested to ask the question, do we now have a complete unified conservation proposal and where that conversation stands? And then, consistent with what we had identified as a logical next step yesterday, we want to support continued development of the MPA packages. And what we have in mind is probably three concurrent breakout groups. One, the Fisher proposal, the refinement of that. A second, the conservation proposal. And a third, we might call integrated or non-aligned or some other such word. And we want to recognize that there are some members of the CCRSG who have not yet signed on to any particular package, may have other concepts they have in mind, may wish to perhaps draw from the various candidate packages that have been submitted, and we want to support that effort as well. So that is generally how we want to start the day. We anticipate that caucusing will continue through the morning and into the early afternoon. We'll then have an opportunity to present around mid-afternoon any revised packages that may have taken better shape or been revised in significant ways. We then, at 2 o'clock, will take a break, and the I-team will compose a straw vote mechanism. We'll come up with a ballot. Most likely this will be a written ballot, and we will then go ahead and deploy that in the afternoon sometime around 2:30 or so. We'll tally the results. We'll share that with all of you, and then we'll begin to outline our presentation to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. So that is the flow we have in mind, very similar to what we identified yesterday. So, Mike DeLappa, do you have anything to add at this point?
Well, just that I think we made some really good progress yesterday. We were all very pleased with the range of alternatives and proposals, and what we like to do today is really try to refine those. Again, as Scott said, come up with some complete packages, and then begin to see if we can find some areas where there will be more movement and agreement, so that, you know, as we move this to the Blue Ribbon Task Force, we're making their job somewhat easier.
Thank you. We don't want to insist that you spend half the day caucusing if that's not productive, and Eric's pointed out that we had intended to bring you back from those and see those presentations actually later this morning. Obviously, I think that the initiation of the caucusing started perhaps a little later than we had anticipated when we wrote the original agenda, and so we want to give it fair time, but when it runs its course, we'll bring you back and invite presentations of any revisions. John Curlin, do you want to say anything additional in the way of sideboards at this moment? No. You're enjoying your croissant. Okay. All right. Phil Eisenberg, do you have comments you want to share?
Go and sin no more.
Thank you for that timely benediction, Chairman Phil. All right, let's see what kinds of developments there are to report. Steve, I see your placard up, and we'll go around the table here.
Yeah, and Howard and other CFC members may want to contribute to this, but the Fisherman's Proposal Group, which is 15 or 16 of us or so, did have a caucus session immediately after the meeting yesterday, and it wasn't really specifically about what changes we might entertain, but it was about the reality that we really need to, for whatever changes we might entertain,
need to go back and do some checking with our constituents. And so there was a pretty strong reluctance expressed to make absolute commitments to changes at this meeting, but that we would do it by Monday so that the I team has it in time for the SAP meeting on Tuesday, I think, and what have you. That doesn't mean that we would not participate fully in today's caucusing and discussions and listen and what have you, and maybe some of us will be nodding yes to things and what have you. But ultimately, we have to go back to the docks. There's a lot of people back there with arrows aimed at all of us. Mm-hmm. And so we just got to do a little homework before we can make commitments.
Understood. I think, as Steve points out, this exercise we're involved in has both a substantive and a process aspect, and the credibility you each have with your constituencies is very important, and we all on the I-team acknowledge that. Maybe it would be important to understand the kinds of changes that you heard or that you are considering, and I just wanted to mention that there is a tool to support that. That's being made available. Evan took very close notes yesterday and has a document that he will shortly make available, which is a summary of the comments that were heard yesterday. We think that would perhaps support your continued deliberations. Let's continue around and see other comments. Howard?
I just basically wanted to echo that, and I think that it today's would be a really useful way to figure out how to potentially make the two proposals closer together in principle, but I think from a specifics and details perspective, we'd like to submit things in the form of changes to the existing after some deliberation over the weekend.
Right. So there's this sort of checking back home step, as we call it in the negotiation business, and formatting.
It's also crossing the T's and dotting the I's, making sure we got everything clear.
Right, a documentation need as well. Got it. Any other members wish to give us updates or status reports on how things have evolved? Steve, again.
I think I just want to maybe add a little bit to the earlier comment. The other thing that we need to do in terms of the CSE proposal is to make sure that whatever changes we're entertaining now fits with the real rigorous science part of our proposal. And I do want to say something that I was kind of oblique about yesterday, but I should be more specific about perhaps. We have some significant science help in our proposal from Richard Parrish, who has volunteered his time to work with us. And so he's been integral in making sure that this makes sense scientifically in terms of the MLPA and generally fishery management. And he's someone who I think is real excited about working on this project because he sees the value in being able to incorporate the knowledge of the fishing community, the at-sea knowledge over years and years, into basically good, rigorous science. And he's also someone who's probably more familiar than most on the SAT, frankly, with the regulatory regimes that have come into place. And so he can integrate that as well. So he's been a great asset to us, and it's part of what we want to make sure that we have basically gone back and done our homework on is to work with him on any future changes that might occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Just hang on. The I team needs to caucus a second here.
I have an off-point comment, so I'll take this advantage of this time as they're caucusing. Jeremiah O'Brien raised a concern with me at dinner last night about one aspect of my presentation yesterday, and this had to do with the proposed state marine conservation area in Monterey Bay that was proposed as a no-bottom trawling area. I tried to be clear in my presentation that what I was proposing was something that was temporarily delayed and would only be implemented upon successful negotiation between a couple of environmental groups who are working with bottom trawlers in that area on a buyback phase. Jeremiah's concern, I think, was that folks may have misunderstood and thought that I was saying that those groups were signing on to this proposal and supporting it, which is not the case. We put forward in the conservation alternative, again, this proposal for an SMCA in that area. I was referring to the other process, just to be clear, that we were proposing that as something that would happen temporally subsequent, you know, once that negotiation was resolved. If it is, then we were proposing this management measure. But I did not mean to imply that the groups involved in that negotiation had a position on the management measure, because they do not. So I wanted to be very clear about that, and I thank Jeremiah for raising that concern to me.
Thanks, Caitlin. Any other status reports and updates that people wish to share at this point? Howard?
Yeah, this isn't so much of a status report or an update, but at some point I think I need to bring up this kind of a global issue. And I wanted to pose an alternative viewpoint to that presented by Caitlin yesterday, that the Act requires that all depth ranges and habitat types be represented in reserves. Highly restrictive marine conservation areas in deep water areas can provide just as strong protection to both fisheries and biodiversity as can marine reserves. And specifically when these areas are restricted to fishing for only highly migratory species. There's very little dispute over this from a scientific basis. And in terms of the Act, these marine conservation areas can better satisfy the Act's goals and the region's objectives than do reserves. So it's been reported that the Act requires reserves in these areas, but the Act does not contain any such language. And I just wanted to make it clear that the supposition that the Act requires that is not clear.
I think the I-team may wish to comment here.
This issue came up in one of the work sessions that Howard and I were involved in, and we forwarded this question to the department's legal counsel, and the answer we got was that the Act did require that. So that's the guidance that we've been given by the department's legal counsel, and I understand you have a different point of view, but just to be clear, that was what we were told that the Act requires.
Yeah, and we're saying that particular interpretation is wrong.
Right.
And it's crystal, and in our opinion, it's crystal clear that it's wrong.
While you consider whether you have additional updates or not, I know for a fact that Kirk Sturm does have an update that he wishes to share with us.
Okay. I wanted to let all the stakeholders know that I've completed the work that the socioeconomic work team gave to me through a scope of work, reminder that the three areas were a meet and greet with the cities and counties in the study area, gathering contact information, and gathering planning documents as it relates to the ocean land interface activities. I've got a binder here. Of the work that was completed. On top of that, there's 31 pages that's a report that I wrote that kind of gives the highlights for the documents, and I have extra copies of just that 31 pages or so. Thank you.
Thanks, Kirk. Okay. I want to return to the question that I posed a moment ago regarding the status in particular of the conservation package, and ask Caitlin or others if you wish to provide any status reports on that.
What precisely is your question?
Precisely, my question is, how close are we to a unified conservation package? Has there been movement that you want to talk about or alert us to, or has there been any change since yesterday, since your presentation?
Well, I guess I'll let Mark and Jesus talk about their section of the coast. But I would say in terms of filling in the gap for the array that I described yesterday, we are still in discussion.
Okay. Thank you. Mark and or Jesus, do you wish to fill us in on any developments?
Yeah, I would concur with Caitlin. We are still in discussion. Those discussions went 2 hours that I care not to mention last night. However, we have been making progress, and I'm looking forward to the chance to continue the caucus starting, I hope, very, very soon, so that we can continue that progress.
Excellent. That's our plan, is to, in fact, support those starting very, very soon. Jesus, do you want to add anything to that? Okay. With that, Steve.
Okay, I will try to speed talk through this, and it's likely to be an hour, I'm afraid. But many of you have already seen pieces of this network plan, but today we want to give you the entire plan and also give you reasons to support it. And first, I'll spend about 10 or 12 minutes on an overall review, and then several other stakeholders will speak to the individual core areas. This plan was put together by members of this regional stakeholders group, who are also members of the California Fisheries Coalition. Together, we represent nearly all the recreational and commercial fishing organizations that have an interest in this area. Also, abalone farms, kelp harvesting, harbor communities through harbor masters are represented in the coalition. Together, for the last several months, we have sought to involve a much larger extractive community to do a mapping project that will show us where the economically significant fishing areas are. Then we outreached again to the same broader group to determine, while working within the master plan framework guidelines, what areas could provide a real benefit to fisheries and to ecosystems while still allowing for us to continue at least most of our activities. This was very difficult and painful. As controversial as some things are in this group, you can imagine the interrelations between commercial recreational fishing and other interests. There was a lot of interplay and, let's just say, very spirited dialogue trying to hammer out who was going to win, frankly, and who was going to lose. And I think it's fair to say that everyone ended up sacrificing a good deal to put this plan together. We also consulted with members of the science community outside of the SAT team to get some advice about putting this together. Our network proposal, therefore, expresses two primary accomplishments. First, we believe that all of the goals and objectives that we have adopted, along with the requirements of the Act, including the non-prescriptive advice from the science team found in the master plan framework, are met through our network. And this includes the requirements of the Nearshore Plan. The second major accomplishment is that we have done this in the context of minimizing socioeconomic costs associated with providing this level of increased protection, and also provided some opportunities for maximizing benefits. In short, and this is a paraphrase that Chairman Phil might like, we think that the state of California can both have its fish and eat them too. Although we feel the essential elements of the plan are in place, we still consider it to be a draft plan and are willing to listen to comments that we hear today and, of course, from the science team. We do hope those comments will be substantive and particularly address areas that we may have missed or other shortcomings in the requirements of the Act. We also hope and are asking that our group be able to actively interact and speak with, in open dialogue, the SAT when they review whatever opportunities that they review this plan. And we think that's something that other proposals should have the opportunity to do as well, not just us. We also note that the proposal is still incomplete in at least a couple of ways. First, we need to consult with senior fish and game enforcement staff to find out the enforceability, and there may be adjustments that are needed to make it more enforceable. And likewise, although our plan clearly has some monitoring elements, it really does need a better look for monitoring, particularly plans for individual sites. I'd like now to briefly explain how we have approached the guidance provided by the SAT and in the master plan framework. The development of our proposal was primarily based on the guidance found in the master plan framework and by the goals and objectives that we've adopted. The approach used by the CFC stakeholders was to develop closely spaced combinations of MPAs with different protection levels that would produce a number of core areas, These core areas are intended to provide for both the majority of the protection of adult populations and for the facilitation of larval transport of important bottom-dwelling fish and invertebrates. Our proposed proposal designed 7 MPA combinations. These are the core areas. These areas have an average size of 17 square nautical miles and average spacing of about 21 nautical miles. They comprise 121 square nautical miles of the 152.6 square nautical miles of the whole proposal. And the difference there is because there are a few of our MPA proposals are outside of the 7 core areas. These areas protect all resident finfish and all or most invertebrates, the exception being in some cases for squid, Dungeness crab, and spot prawn. These combinations result in large core areas that preserve important existing social, economic, and recreational uses while maximizing the area's protective resident species that are likely to benefit from most MPAs. 5 of our 7 core MPA areas have the MPAs extending from the shore to the edge of state waters. We protected a very large area of the Monterey Submarine Canyon. About 30 square nautical miles of the canyon is placed in a no-trawl conservation area, and 9 square nautical miles of the deepest portion of the canyon is within state waters, is within a no-bottom contact conservation area that will completely protect the deep water organisms in this unique environment. The Pfeiffer-Burns Reserve and adjoining conservation area is cited to include the Partington Canyon, Submarine Canyon, and to be adjacent to the federal no-trawling area that extends to the edge of state waters in this area. This combination provides continuous protection to benthic organisms from shore to 50 nautical miles offshore. We have also paid special attention to the critical intertidal zone. We protected 3 extensive alongshore areas by placing or supporting intertidal reserves at Onondaga, Sandhill Bluff, and Pacific Grove. In addition, intertidal, littoral, and benthic invertebrates are protected in most of the proposal's conservation areas. We attempted to include every key marine habitat. The CFC stakeholder proposal consists of 29 MPAs. Our evaluation of replicate MPAs is still being evaluated. However, our preliminary evaluations show that most of the common habitat types in this region have 5 or more replicates. We also point out that our study region is only part of a larger bioregion, so there are other opportunities for replication that exist in the MLPA process. The fisherman's proposal achieves a network that provides resource protection, minimizes negative impacts on stakeholders, and creates new or continuing positive socioeconomic contributions. It utilizes a wide range of local stakeholder knowledge of existing protected areas and also other habitats and their uses. This has resulted in a network that has more MPAs than we originally thought were going to be needed. But it also resulted in a wide range and a complexity of protection levels. And again, this has not been without controversy, internal controversy, and sacrifice on the part of our members. We are also still unsure if the new Vandenberg MPA is consistent with present requirements of the Department of Defense. And it's possible that the Diablo Canyon Reserve will have to be made into a conservation area with strict rules to still allow for the operation of the adjacent power plant. The Pacific Fisheries Management Council has now enacted major groundfish conservation areas along the entire West Coast. The CFC proposal has utilized 2 of these conservation areas to provide enhanced protection. We cited 2 conservation areas in the state water portions of the federal Monterey Bay Conservation Area, and that's the no bottom contact Monterey Deep Canyon area and also the no trawling Monterey Canyon area. And we placed an MPA adjacent to the federal conservation area that extends southwards in federal waters from Point Sur, and that would be the Julia Pfeiffer Burns Conservation and its associated reserve. CFC stakeholders recognize that there is considerable controversy and little available scientific information available concerning the relative merits of no-take MPAs versus MPAs that allow the take of non-resident predators, non-resident forage species, or high-value resident invertebrates. In addition, there is little information available regarding the size that MPAs must be to provide near pristine age and size composition of exploited fishes and shellfishes. The CFC stakeholder proposal, therefore, includes a wide range of MPA combinations that will allow for the scientific assessment of the different levels of protection. Our proposal also supports the continuation of the well-monitored Hopkins State Marine Reserve and adds the Sandhill Bluff Intertidal State Marine Reserve specifically to support the educational monitoring by UCSC. Our proposal also includes a wide and balanced range of MPAs sizes. 7 MPAs are less than 1 square nautical mile. 5 are between 1 to 2 square nautical miles. 7 are between 2 to 5 nautical miles, square nautical miles. 5 are between 5 to 10 square nautical miles, and 5 more are larger than 10 square nautical miles. One question that must be resolved before a proposal can be finalized is the degree to which the Rockfish Conservation Area protects specific habitats and species and generally contributes to meeting the goals and objectives of our Central Coast region. The Science Advisory Team must weigh in on the details of answering this question. We also note that the Fish and Game Commission made it clear at their last meeting that the state water portions of the RCA do contribute to habitat and species protection and should be considered when analyzing the need for additional MPAs. This proposal has been put together without any formal socioeconomic assessment. What has occurred is that fishermen and others who stand to be impacted by this MLPA process have contributed their life's experience as to what areas will substantially harm them or benefit them, and what other areas may offer equal or greater protections, but with less socioeconomic harm. This proposal, therefore, although a non-academic socioeconomic analysis, has been ground-truthed in the most profound manner. That concludes the overview. We want to go now to talking about the 7 different core areas, and I want to start with Howard Egan to the north.
Okay. Just a couple of kind of global comments about the network before we go to the northernmost portion of the region. In spite of the decision support tool, we were able to create summary reports for the entire proposed network. And we grouped our network summary into 4 levels of protection. First level was our entire network. The next was a subset that had a complete protection for groundfish. In other words, no take of groundfish in the subset of MPAs. And then there was a network subset of MPAs that I am coining the term full protection MPAs. These are MPAs where only salmon or highly migratory species, possibly spot prawn trap fisheries, are allowed. And this is kind of an evolving category we're playing around with. The fourth one is the subset that is reserved, that is strictly reserves. And I just wanted to throw out just a few numbers to clarify where we're at with this network. The entire network comprises approximately 17% of the study region, the no groundfish take portion of the network comprises 9%, and within that 9%, no groundfish subset takes 12% of the mapped hard bottom within the region is encompassed inside that subset. Likewise, with the entire network, 32% of the mapped hard bottom is encompassed in our network. The full protection subset, 7% of the study region is occupied by the full protection subset, and 8% of the hard bottom is within that. Reserves is about 2%, and 3.6% of the hard bottom is in reserves. Also, just a side note, the vast majority of the estuary area in the entire study region is covered in proposed MPAs under our proposal, and potentially up to half is in an SMR at Elkhorn Slough. So first, I'm just going to – can we go to the first northern slide, please? Core One.
You mean Zone One?
Yes. I'm going to go fairly quickly over the intertidal and reserves first. First, we have up there at the very top a long sinuous stretch that is the Año Nuevo intertidal reserve. It's a formalization of the existing invertebrate protection area. Basically, it takes the same boundaries of the invertebrate area and formalizes it into a state marine reserve. Invertebrate take in this area is primarily closed during the month of December, or is closed during the months of December through April. Oh, thanks. Where do I push it?
Yeah, you push on this little button down.
Got it. Where the heck is it? Okay, so that's this area right here. The invertebrate area take in this area is already closed during the months of December through April, and in the spring and summer, it's highly restricted access due to the pinniped haulout area. So this is a good candidate for a reserve there. It covers a large range of shoreline types. Pretty much all of the shoreline types that are in the region are represented here. I'll go on to the next. The next intertidal reserve is also up here, and it's the Sandhill Bluff Reserve. That's this one right down here. The Sandhill Bluff Reserve also has a very wide range of shoreline types, and the proposed reserve is sited in such a way that it has minimal to no impact on shore fishing, as its boundaries are mostly in areas where people do not shore fish. And if the boundary falls just short to the southeast of Natural Bridges State Park, which is shore fished quite heavily. So that affords full protection for the invertebrates there. Can we go to the I'll just stick with this slide. Thanks. So this brings us to the Greyhound Rock State Marine Conservation Area and State Marine Reserve Complex. This area comprises about 12.6 total square miles, and within the State Marine Reserve is approximately 3 square nautical miles. The regulations in the conservation area are prohibits the take of finfish and invertebrates except for recreational and commercial fishing for salmon, coastal pelagic species, including squid and Dungeness crab. Recreational fishing from shore within the conservation area is allowed. And, of course, within the reserve, there's no fishing. This area represents extremely high-quality rocky nearshore habitat. Pretty much all of the nearshore rocky habitat types are represented here, including shelves and pinnacles and things of that nature. And let's see here. I'll speed things up here a little bit. I'm going to gloss over a few more things. This particular region, we did a sub-mapping of the hard bottom in the area north of, essentially north of Monterey. This particular region fully protects 20% of the hard bottom in the hard bottom area that is non-canyon hard bottom in the whole northern region. So this is a very substantial portion of our available fishing area. Our rationale for this was that we have some very, very important areas both to the north and the south, and this particular area we felt was the best possible attempt to be able to continue fishing in the areas that Año Nuevo and then south of this area down to the beaches by Aptos. Let's see here. Now I can go on to the next slide. Okay. Now I'm going to talk about the no trawl zone and the Monterey no bottom contact zone. The no trawl SMCA comprises about 20% of the hard bottom in the entire region. And the it formalizes the EFH designation that was brought forth by the PFMC. And as Steve mentioned the sizes of that area earlier, and I'll repeat them. It's 51 square nautical miles, or about 6% of the study area. Within the smaller dark blue region, so the non-trawl region is this area out here, and the no bottom contact region is this area here, which is about 9 square nautical miles. Only take of salmon and other highly migratory species are allowed, and coastal pelagics are currently allowed. This is on the cusp of being what we're calling one of these full protection zones. We conceived this combination of the no-trawl zone and the no-bottom contact area as a superior alternative to the combination of the Soquel Hole and Portuguese Ledge conservation areas. It's larger, it covers more diverse and better benthic habitats. Let's see, and the final one I'm going to talk about is the Elkhorn Slough, which is right over here. This is an expansion of the existing State Marine Reserve. It's the only large estuary in the area, and it basically fully protects of the estuary, and there's quite a bit of mudflats and clamming and things like that that go on there, but it's also a habitat for sea otters and things like that, so it's a good protection. And I'm going to hand it over to David to continue pick up on the peninsula.
For most of you guys that were at the Monterey subgroup meeting, which was quite a showing, I might add, which was great, lots of interest. The area that I'm going to talk about is probably the most, or the area of the most interest. And one thing that I talked about earlier, I don't know if we have a, do we have another slide of that, Howard, that's going to get me closer to?
Just as good as it gets.
Okay. Just to detail, the two areas that I'm going to talk about are actually the three areas are the Ricketts Conservation Area, which is the area between the breakwater and the Hopkins Marine Reserve Area. It's an area right now where there is currently no Department of Fish and Game Protection. The area that we've drawn off there comes off of the knuckle of the breakwater and then comes out to 60 feet and then comes into the corner of the existing Hopkins Marine breakwater.
Dave, if I could interrupt just for a second, we're going to put on a close-up view for you.
Okay, that would be great, and then I can help point out.
Suggestion is to switch to the GIS mode and get better resolution.
Okay. You don't have that red light, do you? The pointer light?
Howard?
It's coming.
Ah, great.
Wiring maze underneath there.
This looks like more.
Oh, yeah, it's the bottom of the thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Is there a... it's the button underneath
there. Okay. The bottom one.
Don't
point that. Okay, it works. So the area I'm talking about right now is this area here, which is it's a very important non-consumptive dive area. This is where the divers come and they launch off the beach. And so we felt that there was a need to have an area here that was protected from any commercial fishing at all. And also, so it's a very minimally allowed fish area. I'll tell you what the areas that we're planning on allowing recreational hook and line. And the reason that that's important in this area is because of the small skiffs that come out around the breakwater. There's a weather break at this point here. And if for a small skiff, a 14-foot skiff, or someone wants to pop out, they can get into this area here, but they really can't go past the bell buoy. So this is a very limited area that they would be able to get to. And then the other is kelp harvest. For the same reason, the abalone business that is down here, you know, this is the area that they can get to without having to go out past the weather break that happens here, that occurs here. And as a fisherman that's fished in this area for 25 to 30 years now, I can really tell you the weather from this line right here really changes when you go around that point. So it's a very, very important area for the kelp guys. For the recreational spear fishermen, you know, they would still be able to take the halibut and highly migratory species, which is not really going to affect the rockfish and what the non-consumptive divers are coming out to look at. So that was the idea behind this. It's a small area. It's not a truly scientific ecosystem protected type area. This is a area of very high use for the entire peninsula. Is what our goal here was to try to divide it up and give everybody a piece of the pie. And by creating a marine protected area here for the divers, we also have the existing Hopkins Marine Reserve, which is not going to change. It's still going to maintain a reserve. And then moving out here to a large conservation area. This conservation area is basically going to ban commercial rock cod fishing. It's still going to allow recreational rock cod fishing, salmon fishing, crab fishing, some of the other things that a lot of the very local near shore or out of Monterey Harbor guys still fish, but it's going to protect the rock cod. We also have a near shore reserve around the area, which is going to protect the tide pools, and it's going to go all the way from the Hopkins area. Something else that we worked really hard on that Steve touched upon is we really wanted to have enforceable shapes, and that's the reasoning behind some of our designs. You know, there's rocks here or spots there that maybe some people would have liked to have included or excluded in these reserves, but being a commercial fisherman and knowing how enforcement works and knowing how important it is to have straight lines and waypoints that the Department of Fish and Game can shoot lines, these are the type of areas that they can enforce. And it really is important to have specific boundaries and courses. So that was the reason behind such square shapes. And sometimes it may, like I said, it may include or exclude a rock here and a rock there, but for the most case, it encompasses all the areas of concern. So this was really a ton of thought was put into this to try to take everybody's concerns into account, and so that's what we've got for the Monterey Bay area. And the next area is going to be Carmel Bay.
David, can I interrupt you just for a second?
Yes.
On the handout we have, in handout 2, doesn't seem like there is a description for your Pacific Grove conservation area. And I guess that was an error of omission. I just wondered if it was also included in the analysis that follows that when all those MPAs were analyzed. So it was analyzed, but it was not included just by mistake on the hard copy then? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so Dave Edlin's going to handle Carmel Bay.
Okay, if we go to the next slide, if we would.
Could I just do a time check here, Dave? How many speakers follow you in this module?
About 3 more after me, I think. 3 more.
Okay, good.
So far, we've had 2 core MPA areas, the one north of Santa Cruz. We also had the deep water core area, deep water Monterey Bay. I'm not sure if Dave mentioned, but the Pacific Grove area is not viewed as a core area based on the small size of the MPA areas. and the significance. So I'd like to switch over to the next map, which will be the Greater Carmel area. So the Greater Carmel area is basically composed of four MPAs, and this cluster of MPAs represents 12 nautical square miles. Some of these MPAs are existing, like the Lobos Reserve that's in the lower pink. Also the blue kind of right Carmel Bay, that's an existing conservation area. But we're proposing basically the small pink area, which is what we're calling Cypress Pinnacles Reserve, which is just west of Pescadero Point and just south of Cypress Point. And we're also proposing that big blue conservation area, Point Lobos Conservation Area, which when you add that up with Lobos, it goes all the way out to the 3 mile state water line. When you take a look at the habitat here, this is exceptional habitat. It's diverse. You've got the upper ends of submarine canyons. You've got unique pinnacles, such as the Cypress Pinnacles. I honestly think this is about as good as it gets. And it's also areas that are very highly valued by the user groups here at this table. As was mentioned by Dave Crabb, the fishermen in putting together our MPA network try to take into the account that we have many users in the Carmel and Monterey areas in particular. So our philosophy has been one of sharing. We don't believe that any one user group should dominate the usage of these key available areas. They're key access spots. And so that is one of the overriding philosophies that I'll talk about a little more. When you take a look at the restrictions here, three of the four MPAs do not allow rockfish take, commercial or recreational. Also, all invertebrates are protected with two exceptions. In the conservation zone outside Lobos, that allows the catch of spot prawns. And then in the Carmel conservation area, we would allow squid take. But those are the only two invertebrates in this cluster. If we take a look at these areas one by one, I'd like to talk about the sacrifice that was put into these here. Let's first talk about Lobos. On Lobos, we expanded it to the north, we expanded a little bit to the west, and we expanded it quite a bit to the south. And in each one of those areas, there was significant pain from the fishermen around the table and the fishermen we represent. These are prime areas. To the north, we basically added on Mono Lobo Wall and both North and South Monastery. These are areas highly prized by non-consumptive divers, unique areas. The front of the canyon of Carmel Canyon, and those would be now part of the reserve. To the south of Lobos, we actually even have more fishermen in the fray. We actually have commercial squid, rock fishing, we've got party boats. Everything is happening to the south of Lobos in that area. And by expanding the reserve to this extent, a lot of our traditional grounds would be then in part of the reserve. But we do realize the importance of having these larger reserves, and certainly Lobos is one that we think is worth expanding. You'll notice that we try to follow latitude and longitude lines here to make it easier to enforce these. And switching over to the conservation area for Lobos, it's a big area that represents about 6 nautical square miles. It is a very restrictive conservation area. There's only two things you can do out there. You can salmon fish, and you can catch spot prawns. Everything else is protected. So I view it as a near reserve. So we have something that really gives Lobos a lot of protection. If we take a look at the Carmel Conservation Area, the blue area to the upper right, basically that's a recreational fishing area for the most part, finfish. And we're ceding the southern part of it to Lobos. It's a key area for us, and then with this philosophy of sharing, it's a key access point for a lot of small fishermen like myself that access it through kayaks. But on that same spirit of sharing, we've added Point Lobos, or I'm sorry, Point Lobos, Cypress Pinnacles, reserve that big, that small square box. Now, we know that's small by SAT standards, but it has a very unique habitat. If you've ever dove there, it's got three pinnacles that are underneath two major kelp beds, and it's dramatic granite pinnacles, and it's one of the most popular non-consumptive dive sites in this area. So while protecting that area and creating more value for certain user groups, it'll also allow fishing to take place in the other areas. Plus, we think it'll be a good area for scientists to do work, that when you have dramatic pinnacles that are protected, will that small box there give adequate protection? I think that's something that can be monitored over time. So I guess just in summarizing, we try to achieve a good balance between protecting our resources and achieving our goals and objectives with the focus on sharing among users in this popular area, and we think we have achieved it.
Dave, similar comment on the handout. Two of the areas are missing, just for the record. The Carmel Bay and Pinnacles did not get on there. But okay. Howard, they were included in the analysis again. Same question.
Are you talking about the handout that you guys generated?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're in the analysis that DFG did on our whole habitat area, but I see it's not in the arrays analysis. Good point. Okay, now I'll turn it over to Eric, is it?
If you can go to the next, it'd be Julia Pfeiffer.
Or Tom.
And, well, Tom and I are going to kind of tag team. maybe I'll just lead off. It seems like we're kind of adapting our strategy as we go here as far as how we're presenting this, and I appreciate Howard and Dave and you guys going ahead to kind of give us an idea of what we're doing and doing the time check thing. Kind of the basic overview of this whole, this is the next core area, Julie Pfeiffer Burns and Big Creek. I'll front load it with internally within CFC, we've had a lot of difficulty in this whole area, and we realize we still have some problems and some holes and some gaps to fill. Even this morning we were talking about the Julie Pfeiffer Burns area and trying to work out some last minute details, although knowing that we've already turned this in and it's been evaluated, we'll have to kind of go with the playbill here. But so I kind of front load that with we've done a lot of changes here. Originally we had some conservation area down around Big Creek, kind of the blue around Big Creek rather than Julia Pfeiffer, and we've gone back and forth, and it's been an interesting process. It's been remarkable that we've been able to not kill each other all in this whole thing. So basically what we've done here with Julia Pfeiffer, and I'll shut up here in a minute for Tom, is the existing Julia Pfeiffer goes out, I think, to, I want to say, 6,000 feet, but there's only protection to the inverts out to 1,000 feet. Basically what we did is we mirrored Big Creek, went out to 50 fathoms, and put total protection on it, commercial and recreational, and then surrounded it with a conservation area that allows, salmon, spot prawn, and help me, Tom?
Wet fish. Squid, anchovies.
There's a lot of habitat there. It gets very deep very quickly from once you get past the Sur Shelf and work all the way down into Pages Blancas. It gets real deep real fast, so you get real good depth range, not having to go out very far. Partington Canyon's in there somewhere, the head of the Partington Canyon. And, like I say, it goes so deep so fast that you get a lot of great depth range. You've got abalone out there, black and red habitat. You've got otters. You've got some creeks. Whether or not any have steelhead or not, it's probably too steep for a steelhead, but I'm not sure. A lot of kelp, macrocystis, and bull kelp. Real lively, real good area. Tom, you want to finish up on that one?
Yeah, it's real unique habitat along there. It's the Julia Pfeiffer Burns recreational park, or it's has a waterfall there, and it's a freshwater plume. That area has, in that conservation area, it takes in a lot of submarine canyons out there that will be protected, except from spot prawns, and Big Creek, it has a lot of monitoring done to this day. they've been studying in Big Creek for a while, and by having Big Creek there and then having Julia Fibers as a new reserve and then having a conservation like a buffer area around it, we'll be able to monitor inside the new reserve in the conservation area, and the small fleet of live fishermen that launch out of Mill Creek and out of Big Creek will still have an area to fish in between the conservation area and Big Creek that will provide some kind of monitoring and assessment of all the areas around there and above the conservation area by Julia Fibers. Above Julia Fibers, they'll be able to work that area and to see exactly if these reserves are working or if they're not working. So that's a very scientific layout for those reserves right there. We had a lot of help with scientists to put those together. It provides a corridor for the EFH, like the guy was just talking about, that fish can travel with all that protection back and forth to the deep and to the shallow. It's just an all-around nursery land for small nearshore fish. That there's lots of small fish in that area. I fished that area for the last 12 years, and there's definitely a lot of... It's a nursery for small fish. It's calm. It's protected. It's protected from Pfeiffer's Point. That's a lee in there, so you don't get a lot of heavy energy from swells and currents. It has the upwelling, but doesn't have all the big surf and everywhere like Big Sur does and down by Lopez. So it's pretty protected to protect all that larva that's in there and all those small fish. And it's just an all-around perfect area to put a reserve.
And a couple more real quick points. Access out there is pretty darn limited, especially by boat. It's kind of at the hinterlands for us guys coming up from the south. And it's pretty well blocked from Point Surf for folks that can only get around there in decent weather. So from a standpoint of being a relatively pristine area from water quality and land use, you know, there may be a little bit of ag up in the hills that has some runoff issues, but for the most part, it's pretty untouched in that regard. But like Tom says, there's only a few places you can hide up there, and this zone along here is one. And if the weather does get stinky up there and somebody's up there on a one-day or maybe a two-day trip, that kind of ends up forcing them into one area, and that's why it's been so contentious to deal with. With that, Tom, I guess we're done. We're on to San Simeon Moro Bay. You and Rick are up.
Rick, you want to start?
Do you want to do Cambria, Tom?
Okay,
or you want me to do?
I'll do both, I guess.
Sorry.
Thanks. Okay, so we'll start at San Simeon Leffingwell Conservation Area. This will be a... It's that top small area. That will allow recreational fishing only and diving. That area there is sandy, rocky, kelpy. I mean, it would be a good sport fishing area. You have a way to, it goes out to 60 feet. You have a way to monitor both recreational and near shore commercial right next to each other. See what's going on. It's a fairly small reserve, but it's all good habitat. And, you know, the Cambria Fishing Club and those people in that area would like to see a sport fishing area so they can get the nearshore guys out of their hair, basically. And that will provide for them for that. Okay, the Ked Norris, or we call it the Cambria SMCA, is basically the Ken Norton Reserve. Here, it's the numbers aren't right. We have a kind of a, we got a, it's not completely right here. The numbers are not right. it should be 2 miles instead of just a mile and a quarter. This will go out to 3 miles. It'll allow salmon fishing, but no take of groundfish. It's basically this an extension of the Ken Norris Reserve that won't allow any types of groundfish to be caught there. That is a very, very heavily fished nearshore area and has been for the last 15 years. It's going to be hard to give that up. The smaller guys out of the ports and that launch off the beach have fished there a long time, and there's a lot of fish there. It's good habitat. It's a lot of kelp. Oh yeah, and that also will allow kelp harvesting in that area because there is kelp leases there. So that's got to be mentioned. So salmon fishing and kelp harvesting will take place there still.
Thanks, Tom. You want me to?
I had one question about the San Simeon one, Tom.
Yeah.
Did you say that was just recreational, no commercial take in that area?
Yeah, just rec, just out to 60 feet.
Okay.
Rick, as you get poised to continue, we're aiming to finish up in about 15 minutes. I hope that's sufficient time to cover the rest.
Was that? Are you basing that in my past history?
No, not at all. Oh. just kind of where we are with the time splits, that's all.
Thanks. Tom, you did a great job. This is hard. It's really hard to hours and hours and hours and days of work have gone into this. It's hard for me or personal like Tom to distill that down and make sure you get the right points. Those two areas Tom just discussed are brand new marine protected areas, very prime habitat, also very prime fishing grounds. Although the sport fishing only area from Leffingwell to San Simeon Pier is small in nature, if you just look at the size of it, it extends. It's an extended portion of the coast, and of course, the coast is the main access. And the further you get away from the harbors, even more so. Rarely do you even see boats up in that area these days, unfortunately, to some extent. But I just want to note that. And I guess that leads me into clams. We are recommending the retention of the three existing clam conservation areas in between Pismo Beach and Morro Bay, in the Morro Bay, Pismo Beach, and the one existing invertebrate protection area. At this time, in the existing configuration that they are, what we'd like to suggest to the RSG is that we think about these conservation areas differently than we have. And we are no longer talk about just eliminating human take. We would recommend that we keep no human take of clams, at least in this area, as a baseline. But we think there's a lot more work that could be done before we just give up on Pismo clam populations in our area, which are very important to us and the ecosystem. We're suggesting that a lot more work could potentially be done, and if we think about these areas differently, and I would, again, it's very hard to distill all the thought and time that's gone on to all this stuff, but I would just like to mention one scientific study. I think the site is Fensawi and Van Blarikon from 2003 that found that indeed in the presence of top predators and no other management measures, Pismo clams will not recover, top predators being, of course, sea otters in the sea otter range. The Pismo clam was unlikely to recover. That was a finding in the absence of other management measures, but the conclusion of that study, and I can provide it, I have it electronically, as does the MLPAI staff, it's in a number of their sightings. The conclusion was that we may be able to establish MPAs beyond just ecosystem protection, but also to recover or sustainably enhance fisheries. And this obviously is a big move, but it's an idea at least worth talking about for such an important species and such an important benefit to the ecosystem as recovering clam populations, potentially, in our opinion. So, and one, you know, without going into a lot of it, but one example of this might be, for example, to retain the clam conservation area designation and look at installing management measures that might say we might promote a clam cultivation program that might allow us to provide clam seed or small clams back into the natural environment. You know, we don't know at this time. I don't believe there is any science to say that that would indeed repropagate clam or recover clam populations. To put in layman's term, they might all get eaten by the sea otter, but it's hard to imagine that causing a problem, and it seems like it might be certainly an interesting measure. And in the interest of adaptive management, I don't think that we can say that we've ever really tried adaptive management on these areas since they were installed. So that's one of my presentations on that. Now, I just would mention that I have been unable to spend the time. I talked to John this morning. I just haven't been able to. He's been made himself available. I have not been able to get to John with some questions that I would like to ask still about why these areas went out to 3 miles. Can they be reduced to intertidal areas and be better? Should we look at protecting all invertebrates in these intertidal areas? Would that be a better protected area? We're very open to these ideas, to improve them if we can. Unfortunately, right now, because of time constraints and my lack of knowledge, and you know, we just haven't been able to refine it further. These four. We're also recommending a two conservation area designations that would be brand new on Morro Bay Harbor, from the jetties to the entire Back Bay, and Port San Luis Harbor, from the jetties roughly to the pier, and these would be to prohibit commercial fishing, except for very few exclusions, which would be bait receivers, for example. And oftentimes I've had people look at me like I'm up to something with this, like, you know, what are you giving up? Well, historically, there actually has been a surprising amount of commercial fishing that has even gone on inside the harbor, perch traps. I talked to a fisherman last week. Tom was in the office, who described using perch traps, shark fishing, commercial shark fishing in the harbor, stick gear on the jetty. It has gone on. Halibut fishing does exist within both Morro Bay Harbor and down at Avila in this area. So there is prohibitions. We think it's in the interest of the harbor. And again, we are flexible. We would like to talk to people. I blew a meeting this morning. I apologize again to that person. We are willing to look at, I hear that there are people who are interested in a potential reserve designation on some important part of Morro Bay Harbor, and we're certainly willing to look at that. I just need, again, a little more time, and we need to learn a little bit more about that and see if we can incorporate those folks into the program, into our proposal. Diablo, are you going to do Diablo? You want me to try?
Let me jump in real quickly, because Rick, I think, brought up a really good point, and he noted that he and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, but if the desire is to leave those areas for Pismo clams there, it would certainly make sense to change the boundaries and not have them go out to 3 miles, because you're essentially drawing a box around something that you're not doing anything with. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, Rick, I'll go ahead and do Diablo. This next core area is kind of Diablo down to... Yeah, if you would. Next one down. Should get Point Bouchon area. Yeah, that's it. So at the north end up there in the pink, it's the Diablo Canyon around there, and Point Bouchon up off the corner of the map, off the edge of the world. The Pismo Oceano, that's the other clam reserve. Rick kind of already made the case there. What we did down there to kind of sum that up is there's existing Pismo clam reserve down there in Pismo, and then there's the small little intertidal, I think we were jokingly calling it the worm reserve in-house. It's the little one that doesn't go out very deep, and it just protects worms and other invertebrates. What we did in our proposal was got rid of that small, the worm reserve, and incorporated all its protections into the bigger Pismo clam reserve. Therefore, the Pismo clam reserve is protection of more than just Pismos, but all of the things that live in the sand down there in the bottom, all the inverts. Diablo Canyon, that's another one. I know that we've brought up since day one as a de facto NPA, and after 9/11, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission shut down any kind of entry within an hour, within a mile radius of that power plant, which turned it into basically a no fishing zone. I know I've heard arguments against it that it's an altered system, and there's a large vacuum cleaner there that sucks up larvae and spits them back out cooked. That said, there's a mitigation process underway right now that is it's in its formative stages, but in theory, that mitigation money that's coming out of that out of PG&E will go to help offset the impacts that that power plant has. So, in my mind, that argument is moot because it may not mitigate right then and there in that exact waters coast-wide. Whatever those mitigation measures be, they will mitigate for the problems that the power plant produces. I have dove out there. I used to dive out there. I won't say I dive out there anymore. I'll have the guys in the black shoes come into my house. But it is a very unique habitat, and there's creatures there that that you don't often see there, that you see more down the Channel Islands and down in Southern California, which we do see here on rare occasions, but there's a lot of them. So it's very unique in that regard. It's almost a transplanted Southern California habitat in some regards. We're proposing...
Eric, can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
Just a comment. I made a comment earlier that this area, the intakes for the power plant may preclude it. We don't know yet, really, but may preclude it from being a marine reserve, but it could still be a highly restrictive marine conservation area.
Correct. Thanks for that, Steve. That's a good clarification. And this is another, it's an important area. It's another one of those very diverse habitats that, while not as quickly deep as up in the Big Sur area, off Point Bouchon, there is a lot of pinnacle-y, rocky, deep water areas, and it's very productive. It's, from the consumptive standpoint, more so from Port San Luis, from the smaller boats that come out of there, as the weather often does in our zone. We've got northwest winds 15 to 25 knots all spring and summer long. The folks that come out of Port San Luis, that's the only safe place for them to go, is in the lee of Point Bouchon, in that zone from Point Bouchon on south. And that's the only place they can go. If you look south, you got the whole bite of Pismo Beach and down into Point Sal, and you go down there, as anybody that's been out in the water there on a northwest wind day, unless you've got a pretty big boat or you're pretty darn seaworthy, it's not a good place to be. So they're real restricted in where they can go. So we just took the Diablo and formalized it into a de facto MPA, into a real MPA. We're still, again, I'll put the caveat that we're kind of retooling that area. With our proposals, we're still in-house trying to work out some conflicts that we have. But other than that, we think it's still a good candidate despite PG&E.
Great.
Scott, can I just summarize in five seconds?
Please, go ahead.
And that is that I think you've heard all the core area presentations now, and we hope that we've given you all good reasons to support this plan and to support us, frankly, and we hope that you do. And I guess to really close, wouldn't it be terrific if this process could end up with one plan that was really solidly supported by this entire group? Thank you.
Thank you, Steve, and everyone who presented.
Yeah, we did leave. Steve, you skipped a little ahead there.
I'm sorry.
We do have the Vandenberg. Don't forget about us guys in the cell.
Could we have the Vandenberg slide, please?
Tom, you were going to try and go on that?
I think Bill.
Or Bill?
Yeah.
Bill.
Bill, go ahead.
He knows about that area.
Yeah, I've spent a little time down there. The bottom purple thing that curves around Point Arguello there is the existing reserve. It's an ecological reserve. It goes out to 10 fathoms. The one above that that's also purple is a replicate area that covers just about the same amount of territory there. It would also be a reserve. The blue would be a conservation area where the possibility of taking salmon is probably about the only thing going on. I don't think the helicopters will let us set crab traps there and come back and get them. But that's another real interesting area there. That's an area of terrific upwelling. There's lots and lots of wave energy there. It's a spot where they've studied black abalone extensively, and one of the things black abalone really likes, a lot of wave action and whatnot. This takes in a pretty fair chunk of real estate, and the surrounding area is very important for fisheries. You get right there off of Point Arguello, that's the absolute end of the Dungeness crab fishery on the West Coast. But some years we still get them there pretty good. You go around the corner 5 miles and you're into the lobster country down there. It's a real a melting zone there, what do you want to call it, where you get the Northern California stuff into the California Bight. You never know what you're going to catch right in that area. This is a pretty good way to take a place that we can't fish very often in anyway. Sometimes the salmon fishing is very good along the 10-mile or the 10-fathom curve there and preserve it.
Great. Thank you. Steve, thank you very much, Steve and team, very much for your presentation. And obviously this represents a lot of hard work and no small amount of give and take among a lot of different voices and points of view, and that's very much appreciated. What we'd like to do is take between now and about 2:50 for questions and comments, and I'd like to spend at least 10 minutes really just thinking about clarifying questions and then transition and start to elicit from either presenters or others around the table a sense of strengths and weaknesses. I think the presenters hit the strengths pretty forcefully already. And Kirk is going to be recording notes on flip chart here, and Evan and others will be keyboarding notes. So we'll be capturing these comments to support further refinement. So at this point, I'd like to open the floor for clarifying questions about this package concept. And I'll start over here with Art.
Thank you. I wanted to ask first the staff about the effect of, I guess I had to point out first that regarding kelp harvesting and along Cannery Row, there is an existing regulatory closure between the breakwater and the Chart House restaurant. It's about half of the extent of Cannery Row. If that area is declared to be a state marine conservation area, will that regulation continue? Or is it going to be, I'm assuming that it will. I think most of But I'm just wondering if that, in fact, will, or whether the regulation will have to be specified in a marine conservation area. And the second clarifying question has to do with Morro Bay. I know there's some aquaculture in Morro Bay. There's an oyster farm, state water bottom lease there. Whether that lease would preclude a state marine reserve as kelp harvesting lease does or not. Thank you.
So a couple of questions from Art about existing regulatory closures or leases, Cannery Row, Morro Bay area. John Ugaritz, are you able to comment on those or start to?
As far as the existing leases or?
Well, Art had a couple of questions regarding the relationship between existing regulatory closures and new marine protected areas.
Right. That kelp leases, I think, have sort of a unique standing in MLPA because the Act directs us to consider the existing kelp leases, and I think our legal staff would probably direct us to take that fairly strongly as regard to we shouldn't propose a restriction on an existing kelp lease. You have to understand that person is gone into a lease with the state to actually have rights to harvest there. So that's something we should consider in any proposal. And we do have the data layers that show where those existing leases are, so that's available to look at.
Paul, do you want to add?
Yes, yeah, specifically for the Cannery Row area, the regulation now, Art, would be consistent with an SMCA designation if that were to become an SMCA. So it would, and also it would and should be incorporated into the regulations for that SMCA. Did you want to answer, John, Art's question about the oyster leases?
You want me to try that, John, and then you can correct me if I'm – I think I might solve that in a way, is that being what I do in my real job is kind of contract management. Those oyster leases are separate contracts. They do exist, and they're probably a good use in most people's minds, certainly in mine. So I would suggest that any reserve designation that might be recommended by our proposal put forward to up the chain should not include those oyster lease areas.
And Paul, you got to remind me, because I know we asked legal this before as to whether an aquaculture lease could operate within a state marine reserve. And I honestly don't remember what the answer was. It may actually have been yes, but regardless, that's something we could work out in the details.
Okay. Thank you. Any other clarifying questions?
Clarifying, Steve? For John, just on your statement about leased beds. The Act says that the process will take into account the existence and location of commercial kelp beds. Does that mean leased or does that mean commercially used?
Again, all of the commercial beds are designated with a number. They're an administrative unit. Some of those are leased, some are closed, some are open to harvest. I think the ones that we would likely try to avoid are the leased ones, because again, that is an individual agreement between a person and the state to harvest an area, as opposed to an open bed, which just happens to allow fishing there right now.
Good. Other clarifying questions? Mary Gleason.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Rita for making these black and white hard copy maps. These represent the shapes that we have in the GIS that we used for the habitat calculations and the area calculations. And you'll notice on the fisherman's array, one got left off, and that's the existing Big Creek State Marine Reserve. So just wanted to point that out to you and let you know we've definitely already added that back in and can redo those habitat calculations and all that. It doesn't change the percentage as much in terms of what's in state marine reserves. It goes from 1.8% to 2.2%, and then the total area within MPAs, you know, would go from 17.4% up to about 17.8% or so. So just wanted to let you know that there's a minor error there in the habitat and area calculations.
Thank you. I have Steve Schimmick and I have Jesus, and there may be other questions as well. Paul, did you want to clarify?
Just had a question for either Tom Hafer or Rick Algard. Your package does not include any state marine parks, yet for your San Simeon Leffingwell conservation area, the regulation you're proposing are recreational fishing only, which would by definition could be a state marine park. Is there any particular reason why you didn't want to propose it as that? Just curious. Okay. So it could be State Marine Park then, and you would be happy with that? Just wondered. Okay. Thanks.
I think there was a preference to keep it with the Department of Fish and Game.
Yeah, but I think we are also open to input, as is much of it is. Well, anyway, I would just say we're open to input. If a park and even a potential reserve, if that's, let us know.
And that brings up a good point, because it's a question that came up regarding State Marine Park. I'm sort of drawing a conclusion from what Steve just said, that he was assuming that if it was a state marine park, that Department of Parks and Recreation would have authority to manage that area, and that's not true. A state marine park is not the same thing as a state park, and so it would not necessarily become a state park unit, and control over the marine fishing regulations in that area would be under the purview of the commission and the department. The only added twist is that in order to actually physically designate the area, we would have to get concurrence from the Parks and Recreation Commission for the designation process.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks. I have Steve Schimmick, Jesus, and Gordon.
Steve? I have two questions in regards to Vandenberg. Looking at the Vandenberg Conservation Area, I guess I'm just wondering about what's allowed and what's restricted. It looks to me like that the conservation area doesn't restrict anything that is not already, de facto restricted. In other words, there's no restriction on stop. I mean, right now you can't stop, and so you're saying that you're still going to allow the crabbing that's there, the trolling that's there. So does it restrict anything that's not already restricted?
How is this MPA concept different from the current regime?
I'll try. Hopefully you help me out, Tom. This is not my area that I worked on much, but I believe there's a new reserve proposed, a whole new reserve proposed within nestled in with there.
Well, I'm talking about the conservation area.
Okay.
Steve,
thanks, Hard.
Can I address that? I don't know the specifics of that region, but in general, where we have de facto closures, we're trying to formalize them in the form of conservation areas or other marine protected areas, so that they contribute overall to the network. And in this case, we do have a de facto marine conservation area that allows for essentially, as Bill was saying, only salmon fishing. Because, as he noted, you cannot fish for crabs in there because you can't stop.
No, they do fish for crabs in there because they just do it on the fly.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. The answer.
Anyways, the answer is that we're formalizing de facto MPAs as actual MPAs where it makes sense, and this certainly is a case where it makes sense.
Could I make one more comment, Steve, for you? One of the reasons we're struggling a little bit is the primary, Tom Capen. Also, Bill Ward is being thrown into the breach here as an alternate, and Tom Capen has provided a lot of the primary input on this area, and Tom's off fishing. Is that fair, Bill?
So maybe this second question can't be answered, but I guess that the two areas that you're saying offer comparisons, one at Arguello and then one just north of there, they're really, really, really small and narrow, and I think that there's quite a body of research that already shows that those areas can't be, you know, effective. So areas that small can't be effective. So I guess what I'm worried about is that we're setting ourselves up to compare two areas that are set up to fail, and I'm questioning the value of those super small sliver areas.
Okay. Can I jump in here? I guess to maybe Steve, to partially answer your last question, officially what we've proposed, I'm reading from our matrix here, the Vandenberg Conservation Area, the big blue one that we don't have up there, but the whole zone 4, prohibits the take of fin fish and inverts except recreational and commercial fishing for salmon and commercial fishing for crab, Dungeness and rock crab. You're right in that they do fish dungies and rock crab on the fly. And that's only because they can do it on the fly. Everything else is de facto, no stopping and fishing. And we also have recreational, to take into account the servicemen that are there, we provided for recreational fishing from shore, which is proven, at least in the current regime of regulations, to be pretty darn minimal in its impact in that this year and in years past, even when we're in the rock cod, ling cod closures, the seasonal monthly closures, shore fishing is still allowed because it is so little impact in most cases, in the majority of cases. So I don't know if that answers the total question, Steve, but officially it's just those three exceptions because that's what we can do in there now. That's what folks can do in there now.
Good. Thank you. So I have Jesus, Holly, Gordon. Jesus.
For the sake of moving this on, I withdraw my questions.
Thank you. Holly, sorry I didn't see you.
I'm out of your field of view.
You are.
I just had a couple clarification questions. You mentioned the categories of MPAs, and I think it was Howard that covered that. And I just wanted a clarification on the what you called, I believe, full protection or complete protection.
Yeah, we're still toying around with that concept,
okay.
But either reserves or conservation, or they're reserves and or conservation areas that are extremely restrictive, where you're only targeting species not likely to benefit. In general, that the basic example of that is an extremely deep water area where you're targeting highly migratory species only. So that's what we're calling. That's what I'm trying to kind of coin a full protection MPA. They're not necessarily formally called reserves, but they have near reserve quality.
All right, and I had a couple other small clarifications. The Sandhill Bluff intertidal, the offshore extent of that.
It should be in the write up, but
I think it goes to -2 feet, mean low water.
I'll pull
minus
that up.
-2 feet, okay. And then, I'm sorry, on the Cambria, and perhaps you mentioned this, but the Cambria SMCA, the column is listing it as a reserve, but the description is clearly reckoned. Okay, so that it's the description is what you're going with. Okay. Thank you.
And as Tom was saying thank earlier, it goes up to the all the way up to the 33 line. It's missed on.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
And I also wanted to add, I really appreciate the amount of coordination work that I can see went into this proposal. It's pretty impressive.
Indeed. So I have Gordon and Ellen.
I also want to acknowledge that it's clear that a lot of work and a lot of struggles gone into this, and I really appreciate that. But what I and my comments really are clarifying, and I hope they don't sound more critical. But there's kind of an issue with the matrix that I'm seeing in this proposal, as well as even the one we brought forward, and it's kind of, for lack of a better term, it's the so what factor. I see the new designations, but I don't see what's different. Not that it's not there, I don't see it. You know what I'm saying? That it's not. We haven't kind of highlighted that we're going to call this a reserve or a conservation area, and what's changed about it is this.
So kind of what is the effective change in the management regime?
Yes, yes. That
question is not either nothing or it's not answered.
Yeah.
In your view.
Yeah. And just listening to the presentation and just at sort of a first cut at this, I see the exemptions, and my question is, well, so of what you're currently doing today, what's different? That's kind of the question.
Mm-hmm. Which is not a column that perhaps the submittal requirements asked for, I guess, but maybe there's a way that some of this information can be made more clear.
Can I weigh in on that, please?
I would also invite I-Team to comment on the submittal requirements. But, yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Well, I hear Gordon to the extent that if we didn't communicate the difference, then we need to do a better job with that, because I think the differences do exist in this. We did try to make sure that each of the presenters on the core areas talked about who was losing out from giving up those areas. So I think there was a lot of information that came across in that, and I would refer back to that. But maybe we do need to present this in a little different way to show those differences.
If I may, you want to go first, Mike?
Well, just that we will likely not have that kind of analysis, because it's not – I mean, we'll be analyzing these against the goals and objectives of the Act. And so, you know, part of what's happening, I think as somebody pointed out, is that areas where they're de facto or whatever, those are being formalized into an administrative network that as a whole will be better managed, monitored, evaluated. So there's that whole component that will be described in whatever goes forward, the additional ability to actually know if this works and to know that it works as a total unit. In terms of how existing uses today in these areas are different versus with the MPAs versus not, I don't think that that's specific to the goals and objectives. In other words, the goals and objectives are asking, how do you achieve certain objective standards right now with these new designations? And that'll be the specific criteria that we'll be evaluating against, if that makes sense.
I think we're getting there. I think Steve is on the right track. It's that I guess I'm not interested in what's different just for the sake of knowing, you know, what you guys gave up, but some measure of what's working, what kind of improvement is this?
Right. I think John Kerlin wants to weigh in, and then I want to ask all of you to start, if you haven't already, start shifting your thinking to strengths and weaknesses.
I was just thinking of one presentational thing that actually Phil Eisenberg suggested that might help as part of this, which is that we begin to add the no change as a baseline, so the existing MPA. So as an example, part of that will be quantitative, so in the expansion of the Point Lobos reserve, then you pick up an increment, and we should be able to measure that as staff. Mm-hmm. Some of this, though, against existing practices which are known to the industry but are nowhere captured in regulation, will be much harder to provide sort of a quantitative assessment. I think it's important for the qualitative discussion. It's important for the discussion of the group, but I don't think that'll be a staff function to generate that.